And welcome everybody to a special edition of Kicking with Keeler here on the Full Press Radio Network. My name is Ricky Keeler. Happy to be back with you in the middle of the week this week because it's our special NCAA Tournament Bracket Palooza special. Happy to bring it to all of you as we're going to go inside the NCAA Tournament. I'm going to do it a little bit differently than you've seen on a lot of these preview shows and a lot of these places where you go to help you fill out your bracket. And we're going to do it with a couple of people who know these teams pretty much inside and out. And I'll explain what that method is in a little bit. I want to remind you, of course, you can follow me on Twitter, at RickNader555. Follow us on Twitter, at FP_coverage and at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Kicking with Keeler. You'll find it there. Please, give me a rating. Tell me what you like, don't like, and email me, RickJKeeler@gmail.com. Always happy to hear from you. Remember, download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. All of our articles, podcasts, live shows, anywhere that you're looking for coverage, chances are in Full Press Coverage, it's on the app. So be sure to download it today, and we'll tell you more about our live shows a little bit later. So here's the idea for this exercise. A few years ago, I was at a radio company called What's Brewing Sports on Blog Talk Radio, and I wanted to do my own NCAA tournament preview show. But I wanted to be a little bit different. So throughout the year, we would do things I would call, and I've done a couple of them here, a student section showdown, where we would have a couple of student sports reporters on the show to help preview the big college football game with a big college basketball game. So we took it and made it into a Bracket Palooza special, where we had sports editors or sports reporters from different schools to talk about their teams and to talk about the regions. And we've done that here for you tonight. We have six schools. At least one school from all four regions. I will admit, I kind of planned this out before the bracket was released based on teams I thought that were intriguing. It just so happened that I have three teams from one region. Now, you're going to have to, I think, live with that. We tried to break down as many different games as possible in that region. So you'll have three Midwest region teams, but I think all have really good storylines and we'll stick with it. So here are the six schools you will hear from over the course of this show. You will hear from Gonzaga, and my Gonzaga guest for that will be Vincent Saglin-Benny. You hear from Loyola Chicago, Abby Schnabel is on the show. From Texas, Stephen Wagner. From Arkansas, Andrew Joseph. From Illinois, Brandon Simberg. And from Oklahoma State, Chris Becker. Those are your six student reporters you will hear from over the course of this show. But I want to start off this first segment by talking about my initial thoughts on the bracket. And really, there was no huge surprises. I think the committee did a really good job. I don't think there was any huge snubs we can talk about. I know people mentioned Louisville, but I don't think Louisville had enough great wins. They lost to Duke to end their season, and this year losing to Duke is not a good thing. It usually is never a bad thing, but this year was different. I like the committee rewarded teams like Drake and Wichita State. Wichita State, of course, won the American. They get in the first four. Drake gets in the first four. And Drake didn't really get an opportunity to play a big school because of the COVID situations, where there weren't a lot of big non-conference games. So Drake gets the benefit of the doubt. I like that a school, trying to look across the country, in schools I thought I'd like to get an opportunity, VCU, I guess, would be one from the A-10. But the A-10's a pretty good school. So at least the committee took into mind mid-majors, and I thought that was really important. So if you want to go nitpick, I didn't like that West Virginia in the Midwest region is a 3 seed and Oklahoma State is a 4 when you consider Oklahoma State beat West Virginia twice at the end of the season. But people said Oklahoma State has a little bit worse loss than the Big 12. Maybe that decided it. That's okay. So I'm not going to go crazy over it, but I get it. But first off, I want to give a shout-out to the students and to the student-athletes especially. This hasn't been an easy year for coaches and schools and players and things of that nature, and they somehow got it done. And they're trying to pull off this thing where they're playing all the games in Indiana. And I'm sure there'll be some bumps along the way. We've already had some bumps on the road earlier on Wednesday. Oklahoma's second-leading scorer is actually out due to COVID. That was a big surprise because Oklahoma was one of those teams that I'm going to get into a little bit. I kind of like their first round game. you now have to kind of take that off your bracket. So when you're and De'Veon Harmon's the player from Oklahoma. You now have to keep that in mind when you're filling out your sheet. Because that's COVID is still there. It still can happen. Even though they're in Indiana and there's only a limited amount of fans in each game, it still can play a factor here. And you hope all the student-athletes and the coaches and everybody involved in this process gets it done. It's going to be a tough thing to do, but we've seen other sports do it. We'll see if the NCAA can pull this off. But I thought it was a really good selection show. They did a good job just breaking down the matchups, nothing too crazy involved with it. So let's take a look at the four regions. I won't give you my picks. That'll be at the last segment of the show. I will go from the Sweet 16 on. Now, I will preface this. If I do change my pick, I will let you all know on the show that we do over the weekend. So I want to preface that in case I changed a pick, that you heard me say somebody lost here and then they won. If I change my main bracket right now, between now and Friday, I will let you know either on my Twitter at RickNader555 or on the show Sunday, for the fair share of transparency. But let's look at the West region to start off with. And I was thinking Gonzaga, the number one seed. That's no surprise. They're trying to be the first team since Indiana in 76 to go undefeated. The 8-9 matchup intrigued by Oklahoma against Missouri. Both these teams can beat good teams. Both can lose to anybody. With that news on Oklahoma with Harmon being out with COVID, that is a major, major loss. And it makes you consider now, do you go with Missouri in this game? Because outside of Reeves for Oklahoma, and I think Elijah Harkless can step in some big games like we saw in January, but there's not much scoring for Oklahoma right now. So this is a big 8-9 game. I think the Sooners were favored in this game, too. Creighton against the Santa Barbara Gauchos. That's the 5-12 matchup. And I'm looking at the 5-12 and the 4-13 in this region. Virginia taking on Ohio. Virginia right now is cleared to play. They're not out of the woods yet. Sounds like they're going to practice a little bit on Friday. The game is on Saturday. Whenever I look it up, this is my pot. Listen out there for those who do brackets. If I see a popular upset picked by everybody, I'm usually going to try to go the opposite most of the time because that's how you win your pool. And I look at Creighton. I know they dealt with the comments that Greg McDermott made, and they got blown out by Georgetown, the Big East Championship. They're still a good team. I mean, they beat Connecticut a third time to get to the Big East Final. Zagorowski's a good player. And, again, I will admit I'm not a huge watcher of the Gauchos. I know they've got a pretty good basketball team. They shoot at about 48% as a team, about the same rebounding edge as Creighton. They turn over about the same as Creighton. It's a pretty even game, it looks like. I'm going to take the Blue Jays, though, in this game still. I think they've got too much there. I think it'll be close. And I'm still going to take Virginia over Ohio. Yes, Jared Preston's a star for Ohio. But this isn't the Virginia that lost to UMBC a couple years ago. I mean, Sam Hauser makes a big difference for this Virginia team. Now, again, how do I know how they're going to play coming off of getting their ACC semifinal game postponed? They haven't been on the court practicing. That's a big factor. But I'm going to trust Tony Bennett. I think he's a really good coach. And I think, I'm not saying Ohio's coach isn't any good, but I think Tony Bennett's coaching edge is just enough to get Virginia past this game. It will affect them come tournament till they get further along in the tournament, but I think they get through. I'm really intrigued by the 7-10 game, Oregon against VCU. This is a fun game. VCU, known for its more of a defensive game. When you look at Oregon, you've got a couple of guys that I think you could keep an eye out for in this basketball game. Of course, being a St. John's guy, I keep an eye on LJ Figueroa, who shot about 48% from the floor this season. Oregon's got talent, but you have to remember they did lose to Oregon State in the Pac-12 semifinal. You wonder if that has any lingering effects on this game. It's possible. And we all know VCU's history. So Oregon-VCU is an intriguing game to me. Winner that would probably play Iowa-Kansas. As of right now, they seem to be okay. They also had their Big 12 tournament run knocked off in the semifinals due to COVID protocols. David McCormack is going to be in uniform Saturday, according to John Rothstein, against Eastern Washington. McCormack is a big difference for Kansas in the paint. Changes it. This is not your older brother's Kansas, your older sister's Kansas. This is a different version of Kansas, but they're still pretty good. So that's my matchup in the West region. In the East, Michigan being the one seed, no Isaiah Livers. How will that play in a factor in my picks? I'll tell you more about that later. I love the 8-9 matchup in here. LSU against St. Bonaventure. LSU is known for offense. St. Bonaventure is known for defense. I know this is cliche. Will great offense beat great defense? I usually tend in this tournament to go with defense. So I'm tending to lean toward the Bonnies in this ball game. LSU made a good run in the SEC tournament. I kind of like St. Bonaventure here. Colorado-Georgetown is intriguing. Colorado did make the Pac-12 championship game, but remember, I'm going to lean on what Chris Daubertine from Blogging the Bracket told us last week. He doesn't like Colorado as more than a one-and-done team, and Georgetown, you got to love the way they're playing right now. And Kudus Wadab in the paint, I think he's going to have a really good game here. I love Georgetown's guard play. They played a big factor in those upset wins over Villanova and Seton Hall, and they dominated Creighton. I love the way they're playing. Patrick Ewing's got them riding high. I'm going to take Georgetown here. UConn at Maryland, the 7-10. I love this game. Mainly for guard play. You got Aaron Wiggins for Maryland against James Bouknight for Connecticut. That alone is must-see TV. Both these guards are good, and UConn's a different team with Bouknight on the floor. So that's a fun game. And then you got Iona, the 15 seed. I'm glad Rick Pitino's in the tournament. We get to take on Alabama. I would love to see Iona keep this close, and but those kids got nothing to lose. They've been on so many pauses this season. Everything to them right now, being in the tournament, is like a win for them. So we'll see how they handle Alabama. So that's your look at the East. In the South, I love another 8-9 games were good in this tournament, and they usually are. North Carolina against Wisconsin. Wisconsin playing a tough Big Ten all year. North Carolina's had some rough games this year, but did make it to the ACC semifinals. So starting to play a little bit better. Again, not what you're used to from North Carolina. I would not be shocked if they won a game here. The Villanova-Winthrop matchup. I know everybody's picking Winthrop. That one, you go, well, Ricky, you just said you don't normally go with the popular upset. I'm going to go with Winthrop here just because I don't know what Villanova is. Since they lost Gillespie, they've not been the same team. I know they've got Samuels. They got Robinson Earl. It would not shock me if Villanova made the Sweet 16. I think Jay Wright's still got a lot of talent there. Keep an eye on Caleb Daniels as well. But I think there's a limit on how far they can go. And Winthrop, playing really well right now. Big South champion. They have some good talent. Keep an eye on Winthrop there. The 6-11 matchup, I also like, and I like an upset here. I'm going to go Utah State over Texas Tech. Utah State's a much better rebounding team, especially in the offensive glass. They average about an offensive board more per game than Texas Tech does. They got more blocks than Texas Tech does. They commit fewer fouls. I think that plays a factor in this game. Low-scoring game, Utah State coming off a Mountain West championship appearance. And Texas Tech, again, you look at these Big 12 schools and the Big 10 schools, and we talk with a couple of Big 12 student reporters for this show. Does playing in the Big 12 kind of help your chance because you played tough games all season long, or hurt your chances? In this case, I think it might hurt. I'm going to go with Utah State in this ball game to upset Texas Tech. I love the 3-14 matchup here. Just because I want to see how good Colgate is. Rolled through the Patriot League. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. Their net rating is so high because they only played in the Patriot League. Arkansas is really good, but Colgate is really intriguing to me. I'm not going to pick the upset, but maybe I need to have more guts and pick it, but I'm not going to pick it. And finally, the Midwest region, Loyola, Chicago, Georgia Tech, 8-9 game. I know I said last week I would not pick Loyola in any first-round game because I don't think anybody's going to sleep on them. And Georgia Tech's got a lot of talent with Morgan inside, Alvarado at the point guard position. This is going to be a fun, contrasting styles kind of ball game. I'm scared about Oklahoma State and Liberty. We'll say that. I think the 13-seed Liberty could maybe pull a surprise. Tennessee and Oregon State, especially John Fulkerson, who had a head injury that caused him to miss the semifinal game of the SEC tournament against Alabama. Does he return? We still don't have a clear, defined definition as to whether he will be playing against Oregon State. San Diego State and Syracuse is always... Syracuse is a double-digit seed should always scare you in your bracket. Period. We know Syracuse made that run to the Final Four a few years ago when they were one of those teams that were sweating out Selection Sunday. They're kind of in that position again this year. Got a last four byes. Buddy Boeheim is on a scoring streak. Their ACC tournament ended on a buzzer beater against Virginia. But San Diego State's pretty good. I mean, they've won one of the better... People talk about Gonzaga as consistent mid-majors. San Diego State's one of the others out of the Mountain West. So this would be a fun 6-11 matchup. I kind of like, if you're looking for an... By seeds, this is an upset. I don't view it's an upset because I haven't seen anybody pick the other team. Rutgers against Clemson. I just trust Rutgers more. Weird I say that about basketball, but yes, I do trust Rutgers more in this game. So your first four is Thursday night. In terms of the 16 seeds, Norfolk State plays Appalachian State. The winner of that plays Gonzaga. And then Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern play for the right to face Michigan. And then the 11 seeds, Wichita State against Drake for the winner to take on Evan Mobley and USC. And the Battle of the Blue Bloods, Michigan State and UCLA, for the right to play a really good BYU team with Matt Harns, the Purdue transfer in the paint, and Alex Grosillo at the guard position. BYU, people talked about how Gonzaga didn't look the same against BYU. It also doesn't give credit to how good BYU can be. And we're going to get into that with our first guest in a little bit. So that's my impression of the first round games, games I like, upsets I like. If you want to go crazy with upsets, I mean, I'll give you a couple. If Liberty beat Oklahoma State, I would not be shocked. We talked about Colgate already. I'm looking down the board here. Anything that stands out, I would not be surprised if Michigan State or UCLA beat BYU. In terms of 3-4 teams, maybe Eastern Washington can catch Kansas sleeping a little bit, but I think Kansas should win that game. And then the 2-15s I mentioned, Iona is probably the more intriguing one, but I don't really see. I don't think you're going to get that big upset in this first round. But the one thing I'm really interested to see is who the limited fans in the stands benefits. Does it benefit the team that is the favorite, or does it benefit the team that's the underdog? I think when you have a full crowd and the underdog can stay in the game, they get all the crowd support. But does this benefit the favorite and cause fewer upsets, or because is this thing so different than what we're used to? Does the underdog come in with even more enthusiasm that I don't have to be intimidated by playing in front of a large crowd, but that there might be more upsets? This is a wide-open tournament. I know Gonzaga is the heavy favorite, and there's so many people picking Gonzaga to win the championship. But it would not shock you if 6 or 7 other schools won the title. It's been a crazy year in college basketball. No Duke in this tournament. No Kentucky. No Louisville. UCLA is a first 14. Michigan State's a first 14. North Carolina's an 8 seed. These are not the same traditional schools we're used to seeing. And they think that's what brings the intrigue to this bracket. The whole concept of what you're used to changes. Just like as we talked about last week, the whole concept of how we view the world and even and not just sports has changed. So we're excited to break down the bracket for you. And again, we're going to do it a little bit differently. Again, we're going to have student sports reporters on, talk about all the teams. And first up on the show, we have Vincent Saglambeni. Vincent is the sports editor for the Gonzaga Bulletin, which is Gonzaga's student newspaper, so you're going to hear a lot more about Corey Kispert and Jalen Suggs. We're going to talk about Gonzaga's depth at the guard positions, whether if they have some foul trouble, would that be a factor for them? We're going to get into their West Coast Conference Championship against BYU. We'll get into pitfalls for Gonzaga, which, to be honest, I don't see many on this bracket for them. You look at the 2, 3, and 4 seeds, Iowa, Kansas, Virginia. They beat them all earlier in the year in the non-conference. I thought Oklahoma would be a really big test for them, and you'll hear that in this interview, but the Harmon absence due to COVID changes things. And we'll talk about really the craziness that's been this season covering a team that could be the first undefeated team since 1976. And that's how special this Gonzaga group is. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll have our first of six interviews you will hear. Vincent Zaglumbeni talking about Gonzaga and his favorite matchups to watch in the West region. Stay tuned here on the Kickin' with Keeler Bracket Palooza special on Full Press Radio. Be right back. So first up on our big NCAA Bracket Palooza tournament preview special, of course, first up, we have to have the overall number one seed represented. Gonzaga trying to be the first team to go undefeated wire to wire since Indiana in 1976. And to talk about the Zags a little bit more and their path to a potential historic national championship, he is the sports editor for the Gonzaga student newspaper, the Gonzaga Bulletin. Vincent Zaglumbeni is here. Vincent, how are you today?
I'm good, Ricky. How you doing? Thank you for having me on today. I'm excited to talk some Zags. I'm always excited to talk some Zags. So
happy to have you on. So before we get into Gonzaga's potential tournament run, just give me the insight of this weird season for you. It's got to be tough. That's why I want to have student sports reporters on the show. How it's been like covering the team this year, and what's been your favorite part about covering an historic team such as this one?
Yeah, it's been nuts, honestly. It's just been such a, longer season because you don't know what's going to happen at every turn of the season. But honestly, looking back on it all, I'm glad that obviously it's been able to work out and, getting the chance to cover the number one team in the country throughout the year has been, something really special, and kind of being one of the only people allowed in the kennel, like one of the more, electric atmospheres in college basketball. Obviously, I'm going to say it's the best. I'm a little biased, but just being in that, atmosphere and, watching these guys, it's so much different watching them on TV versus watching them live in person, especially, I'm sure you maybe talk about them a little bit later, but watching a guy like Jalen Suggs live does not do it. I mean, watching him on TV doesn't do it justice compared to watching him live. So yeah, just been overall thankful just to have the opportunity to, cover this team. And, it's obviously exciting now because we finally get to have a tournament, especially because, this team last year felt like they had a, really good shot to win it last year. So it's going to be fun, man. I'm excited.
So since you mentioned Jalen Suggs, let's talk about him first. Watching him on TV, and I want to get your thoughts on watching him in person. Watching him on TV, to me, he looks like one of the best passers I've ever seen. The guy knows exactly where everybody's going to be on the floor, makes the right play time in and time out. What do you like the most about him watching him every game?
Probably just his athleticism. Like the guy, he has there's some layups, some of his layup packages that he has, you kind of have to watching him live, you have to have to do a double check a little bit. Just did he really just do that with his body to make that layup? It doesn't make sense sometimes, honestly, but yeah, just the energy that he has and kind of the, effect that he has on the court. He's almost having for me, at least in terms of impact on the court, for him as just his presence, it's kind of, I know they're two different positions, but it's kind of Adam Morrison, to where they have a completely different dimension to the team that, they, didn't really have before. Obviously Gonzaga is more of a big centric school, known for producing a lot of bigs, but for having a guy like Jalen Suggs, who is, just so athletic and, on his nights, he shows up in big moments. He was in the WCC championship game. He was, kind of struggling a little bit earlier in the game from the field. But, of course, he shows up in the big time moment, hits two threes late in the game to kind of seal it for the Zags. So, yeah, like I said before, it doesn't do it justice, watching him on TV versus watching him on, on the court. It's just so fun to watch. And, he's been one of my favorite players that I've seen, through this Gonzaga program over the past, 2 years that I've been here watching the Zags play.
Yeah. I think the game to me that stood out about Suggs was the impact he can have when they were playing West Virginia earlier in the year. He leaves the game quickly with an injury, and it seems like everything's going the wrong way. Comes back, everything just quickly changes in the right direction. That's the kind of impact he can have. And I like with the guards for Gonzaga that one of the teams, especially in the tournament, what we're going to see is a lot of foul trouble. And you're going to have one game where Suggs gets two quick fouls. You have to go to the bench. Their guard depth is just crazy good. Nembhard, who is a key player they got in the offseason, that's worked for them. Aaron Cook can come off the bench, another transfer. So Gonzaga kind of has that figured out that, yeah, if Suggs gets in foul trouble, they may slip, but they won't totally slip with the veteran experience they have behind him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I mean, and like Joel Yates, too, is part of that guard group that's been, you know, really, really effective. Yeah, it's crazy, like, watching Andrew Nembhard, like, because he was, like, he's a really good player. And, like, when he started on the year, like, he was, like, the sixth man. So, and then he eventually worked his way into the starting lineup. Coach, he made that decision to go, you know, smaller, and obviously it's been paying off. But, I mean, like you said, like, you know, the guard depth that they have, you got Jalen, you got Andrew, who's, like, you're a really good all-around player. You got Joel as well, who's, like, an even better all-around player. And then you got Aaron Cook, who's arguably – you know, the best defender on the team. And, you know, in some of the, you know, looking at the West bracket, like they're going to have to, you know, eventually go up against some guards, some good guards. So having him and like having him be that guy to play defense on those guards is going to be important. So it's a nice little luxury that, you know, GU has this year that they haven't really had in the, haven't really, it's not they haven't had it, but it's not really as prevalent in the past years as it is now.
So one guy at Gonzaga who's, well, used to winning is Corey Kispert, who continues to improve year after year, 19 points per game this season, a 90% foul shooter, 44% from three. What has stood out to you the most about not only his improvement on the court, but I'm going to assume that his leadership has also grown over time as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing that I noticed definitely is that his confidence has, like, gotten so much – you know, better over the years. And, you know, kind of understandably so. Last time they were in, last time he was in the tournament, it was, you know, 2 years ago, and they had that stacked team of, like, Rui, Hachimura, Brandon Clark. You know, you had Josh Perkins there as well as Zach Norvell. So he wasn't really, like, those, like, the main option on offense at the time. And, you know, he was kind of like that guy in the corner. I mean, just watching some of the past tournament games, he was the guy in the corner ready to catch and shoot. And, you know, he spent more time out around the 3-point line, but I mean, as he's gotten better over the past, you know, 2 years, you can definitely, like you mentioned, see the development that he's had on the court. He's driving a lot more. He's, you know, a lot more aggressive, and, you know, that confidence is, like, really showed, especially in that, again, in the WCC championship game against BYU. I mean, I think he was kind of struggling as well in the first half. And then, you know, just like that, three straight threes out of the, you know, and they were down 12 at half, you know, right out the half, three straight threes, cut the lead to three. And then at that point, I'm like, okay, Gonzaga's going to win this game. So definitely seeing, you know, Corey's development off the court, seeing his confidence really grow is some of the stuff that, you know, I've really, you know, seen. And, you know, obviously it's benefited him for the better. He's, you know, one of the best players in the country.
You've got Kispert, you've got Drew Timmy in the front court, and Timmy's averaging almost 19 a game, double from what he did a year ago. This is a pretty strong front court for Gonzaga. But I'll ask this, Vincent. If Gonzaga can get beat, what part of their game, if any, concerns you? Like, is there a weak spot that you worry about could get exposed in this type of March Madness format?
I mean, anything can happen in March. So that's just one thing. I mean, we've seen it before. It's not like, even though it's happened once, there has been a 16 seed that's beaten the one seed. And so, you know, some of the things that I think could be, you know, points where other teams could attack is, obviously, you know, Zag's got to play really good defense. They give up, you know, 69 points a game. That's, I think I was looking yesterday, it was ranked like 136 or something in the country. So that's something that I think that teams could you know, look at. And then obviously they're – you talked about it a little bit with the foul trouble with the guards. I think if they get in foul trouble with their big, I think that could be something to definitely look at because, you know, they're not like – their bigs are obviously good, but they're not like physically – like their size isn't as big as what they're used to having. And so, like, if, say, you know, Timmy quick drops or gets two quick fouls, and then you have to put in Anton Watson, he gets two quick fouls. You may be a little exposed there, and you may have to play a little more small. So that's going to be something to definitely look into. And then, you know, finally, like, three-point shooting, I think is, you know, any team can catch, you know, fire on any night, especially in this tournament format. So if the Zags, you know, can defend a three really well, and if they can, you know, obviously they have guys that can, you know, hit the three. Obviously there's Kispert, and then you have Joel, who's been pretty, you know, been very good shooting three recently. And then you have Nembhard, who can knock down some threes as well. Those, I guess, are going to be some of the things that I could look at that, you know, could, you know, exploit the Zags.
I'll ask this for Gonzaga being in the West region. They're playing three teams, potentially could play three teams that they've seen already this season, Kansas, Iowa, and Virginia. So in your mind, an advantage or disadvantage for Gonzaga?
It's kind of hard to say just because all those games were played really early in the season, particularly with that Kansas game. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it obviously doesn't hurt that you've, you know, if you're familiar with a team that you've already seen with that. I mean, and they won all three games by double digits. I don't think that's going to be the case if they are to face them again. I mean, you know, Luka Garza is still Luka Garza. You know, he's, you know, one of the best, in my opinion, probably the best player in college basketball. And then, you know, like, but Virginia and Kansas are two really well-coached teams with really good players. So, yeah, I think it's an advantage, but it's not going to be like a double – like if the Zags are to win, it's not going to be like a, you know, double-digit win per se. So, yeah, I obviously I think I think it'd be interesting to see like how they would play again, you know, if they were to match up again. But yeah, that's how I, you know, kind of view those three matchups. Obviously it has to help them. I think just having that familiarity with playing those teams, especially in neutral sites. So.
Yeah, I think the Iowa game would stand out the most if that were to happen in Elite Eight, because Garza in that game in 30 points, 10 boards, 13 of 18, their front court, well, not really their front court, say four guards, but Garza and Wieskamp had 21 of 34 shooting. I mean, you can't really stop that. And I think the one thing that stands out looking at the line from that game, Gonzaga did have four players in double figures, but also Jordan Bohannon had only 2 points for Iowa. And as a senior guard, I don't think Jordan Bohannon's going to have 2 points again. So I think having to play Garza in that kind of matchup, albeit – and again, the weird part for Gonzaga, you can't – all three games were neutral court games.
Yeah.
So I think that's also they know how to win in a neutral court, albeit in a – bubble limited fan environment, which every place was this year.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing about that Iowa game too, that I think, you know, really, because at the time they played each other, I think Iowa was the number three team in the country. A thing that really stuck out to me was like GU only had like 2 days of practice leading up to that, because they had some you know, I think they were still like they had canceled some games, and that was their next game back. And, you know, on 2 days of practice going on the road against the number three team in the country at the time, and you win by double digits, that's, you know, it didn't look like they skipped a beat. And so, you know, I would like to see that matchup again in the Elite Eight. I think that would be lots of fun. Obviously, you know, we've seen it before in part one, and then you go like the number one team in the country versus the best player in the country. Like what could be better than that in that Elite Eight matchup? So it'll be interesting.
Looking at Gonzaga's bracket, I'm going to give you, Vincent, the one team I think concerns me the most outside of the big team like Iowa, I think would be number one. But number two, I got an interesting feeling on that 8-9 game. Missouri and Oklahoma. If Oklahoma can beat Missouri, and Missouri could have a good match because Missouri's beaten Alabama. They've beaten some good teams this season. Oklahoma beat four top 10 teams in a month. Yeah. And I always wonder with Oklahoma, they were the team I kind of watched all season long and they faded toward the end of the year. The Sooners are that kind of team that you know have the talent to beat the top team. So I think if you're Gonzaga, you kind of – I'm not saying you want to pick Missouri to come out of that game, but I feel Oklahoma could be one of those teams that on any given day they can beat anybody, and on any given day they can lose to anybody. And that's kind of the strange – I have a strange feeling about that potential second-round matchup.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you there. That second-round matchup, like, if they can get past – like, if they can get past that game, and like that game is going to be a really good test for them, if they are to win heading into, you know, the Sweet 16 game. I mean, like you mentioned, you know, they could beat anybody on having any given night, and you know, at the same time, they could also lose to anybody on any given night. So, yeah, I mean, they're averaging 74.8 points per game, which, you know, it's in the top 100. So that's obviously good. I honestly haven't watched a lot of Oklahoma tape, this year, so I can't really give like a definitive, you know, take on them. But I mean, you know, we've seen before those 8-9 games are always, you know, the best games in the first round. And, you know, those are always tough opponents for, you know, that one seed, whoever plays them. So. Yeah, I guess if I had to, I would kind of agree with you, in the sense that I think Oklahoma would be a tougher challenge to Gonzaga than Missouri, but I mean, who knows really? It's anything can really happen. So.
Yeah, the 8-9 games are always the ones I think you agonize the most over making picks on your bracket because it's just very unpredictable. And even you got this Oklahoma is a 2-point favorite in that game, so that can go either way. One quick one on Gonzaga, Vincent. The BYU championship game, I know there have been some in the media that have said it's a cause for concern that Gonzaga got tested. Others have said it's a good thing for them to get tested going into the tournament. What did you make of the BYU game coming back from a double-digit deficit to win that game by double digits?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good test. I mean, especially, like, that first half was just, like, BYU was absolutely perfect. I mean, they shot 68% from the field and 69% from three in that first half. Like, there's only, like, yeah, they could have played a little better defensively, but it's like there's only so much you could do, right, when the team's shooting 68 and 69% in that first half. But, I mean, yeah, obviously it was a great test for them. Like I said, you know, about Corey, I mean – next, like, down 12, next thing you know, three straight threes, and, you know, you're back in it. So, I think BYU is a really good team. I think they're kind of a sleeper team in that East bracket. Like, I have them going to the Sweet 16 to play Alabama. I think they're – Barcelo's a really good guard, and, you know, they have Matt Harms. And, you know, that matchup, too, is going to be it was a good test for, you know, what they could see in the – you know, in the later rounds of the tournament or even in, you know, earlier rounds. Like, I mean, like that Barcelo-Harms combo. I mean, you mentioned it earlier with Iowa. I mean, there's that Garza-Wieskamp combo there as well. So, I mean, and then there, Boeheim, I think you said, was the guard.
Boeheim,
excuse me. So yeah, it's something similar like that they're going to potentially see. I think it all just kind of, you know, circles back around to, you know, Mark Few and the adjustments that he made in that game, in that second half. And he had those guys ready in the second half as well. They didn't let it get too low. Cause it could have been easily just to have been like to, you know, really look down and not, you know, have that motivation to go out in the second half. But, you know, Coach Fee has them ready every single week, and it kind of showed in the reflection of how the second half went about for the Zags.
So last question for you, Vincent, just to get a quick overview. Look at this West region, and I want to get your take on your favorite first round game outside of Gonzaga. This is a region that a lot of people like upsets. People love Santa Barbara over Creighton. We don't know what's going on with Virginia, so you can understand why a lot of people love Ohio right now. Whoever comes out of Wichita and Drake, I think, is going to be interesting in that first four. What is your favorite first round game outside of Gonzaga in this region?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm putting emotions into it, I'm going to go Creighton UCSB. My mom went to Creighton and my brother went to UCSB.
Wow.
So that's, and like my mom obviously is a big fan of Gonzaga too, because I'm here. So there, that potential Sweet 16 matchup may get a little hostile in the house, but, I also like that, Wichita Drake USC game. I think that's going to be a really good game as well, especially if Drake wins that game. Drake is, I think, one of the best, you know, scoring offenses in the country. Yeah, Drake was just a really good team all around. I think I have that as an upset. I think they beat USC. But yeah, I guess those would be the two, like, emotions in it. And plus, that Creighton UCSB game is a really good game as well. So if I had to pick one, I guess I would pick that one. But yeah, March is here, man. I can't wait for it.
I kind of get a feeling that too many people, I mean, being in a team that I'm an alum of a school in the Big East. So I tend to think, I know Creighton laid a huge egg in the Big East championship game against Georgetown. A lot of people love UCSB, and that makes me kind of go the other way.
Yeah.
Because I kind of – Zegarowski's good for Creighton, and I feel like they've gotten everything kind of past them in a way, so I kind of like where the Blue Jays are – not I mean that with a trending. They did make the Big East Finals. They had a good week at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
The other matchup I like, and I'm kind of not sure to go with it, is Oregon-VCU. Because I kind of like the Ducks. Then I saw them lay an egg into Oregon State, and – they've got one of the players that I've covered before, LJ Figueroa, the St. John's transfer. Uh-huh. And VCU is always hectic. You never know what you're going to get out of them. So that 7-10 matchup, I think, could get really interesting.
Yeah, and for, you know, another, you know, interesting game for, you know, people in the Inland Northwest, you know, you got two teams in the Inland Northwest in the West bracket. Obviously, you have Gonzaga versus Norfolk State or Appalachian State, but you got – Kansas, a team who Gonzaga, like you mentioned, Gonzaga already played, and you got Eastern Washington in there as well. So I don't know how that game is going to go. Obviously, as a, you know, Inland Northwest college student, I'm going to be pushing for them. But yeah, this West bracket is, you know, very, very interesting. I think the hardest bracket overall, I think it's that East bracket, whoever GU would have to play in that Final Four, because, I mean, you got Michigan, LSU, Colorado, Georgetown, Florida State's always tough, BYU, either MSU, UCLA, Texas, Connecticut, Maryland, and Alabama. So, yeah, this is going to be so much fun, man. I'm so happy that there's just a tournament this year, that it all worked out.
So, Vincent, tell listeners out there how they can follow you on Twitter, how they can follow the paper on Twitter, any special coverage you guys have planned. Feel free to plug whatever you need to plug.
Yeah, definitely. So you can follow me on Twitter at Vinny Saglimbeni. So it's VinnySaglimbeni. And then you can also follow us on the student newspaper at Gonzaga Bulletin. And yeah, those are the two outlets that we got that I'm gonna, you know, pitch out here for everybody to tune in. We'll have our normal, we're a weekly paper, but I mean, we'll have our normal game coverage, game previews, those kinds of things as well. So it's gonna be fun. We'll be doing some women's basketball stuff as well, because, you know, women's bracket comes out later today at the time of recording. So yeah, Spokane has definitely got a little extra hop in the skip these next, you know, few weeks. And, you know, tensions are going to be high, but, you know, throughout the tournament, it's going to be lots of fun watching both of these, you know, these teams and, you know, like, all these teams and the stories that come with the different teams of the tournament play out. I can't wait for it, man. It's going to be great.
And the women's team did have the buzzer beater to win the West Coast Conference Championship. Yeah. So A lot of positive vibes going Gonzaga's way right now as the men's team tries to chase perfection, the women in the tournament as well. Should be some fun couple of weeks in March. Vincent, thanks for hopping on. Keep up the great work, and maybe we'll talk again as maybe Gonzaga makes a run toward the Final Four. Thanks again for taking the time.
For sure, man. Thank you, Ricky. Appreciate it.
Special thanks to Vincent from the Gonzaga Bulletin for hopping on for the first of six student sports reporters to preview the bracket. And next up, we go to the Midwest region for our first of three schools from this region. Again, we did not plan this way. This seems I had in mind before the bracket came out, just the way it is. And we go to the Ramblers of Loyola Chicago, who you all remember from 2000, from a couple years ago, making it to the Final Four. That Cinderella run. We all remember Sister Jean, who's now 101 years old. She is going to be in Indianapolis, which is going to be fantastic. Going to get some cool, get to see Sister Jean again. That'll be a lot of fun. This is a different Loyola Chicago team than 4 years ago. And they got a tough matchup. This is actually, I think, one of my favorite first-round matchups I mentioned in the first segment against Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's coming in off an ACC tournament title. And Josh Pastner is head coach. Has that really cool face shield he uses during games, and he has that enthusiasm just like. But Loyola still has a couple of players from that team a few years ago. Cameron Crutwig in the paint is going to be a guy you want to watch here. They dominated the Missouri Valley, went 24-4. They lost to Wisconsin out of the league. That was really the toughest non-conference game. But again, not a lot of opportunities besides that. So I want to get the insight of what's it been like to cover this team and also what it's like on campus off a team that went to the Final Four a few years ago. So joining me next up is Abby Schnabel from the Loyola Phoenix. That is the student newspaper for Loyola Chicago. So we dive into this match with Georgia Tech, how this team is different, Porter Moser's coaching style, and we talk about Drake as well. So you're going to have, if you're looking at that Drake-Wichita State first four game, you're going to get some more information on Drake too. So Abby brings some great insight to the table. So our second segment coming right up with Abby from the Loyola Phoenix, and stay tuned for that coming up right after this. Can Cinderella show up at the same ball twice? That's what Loyola Chicago fans are hoping for as they try to make another run to the Final Four. And joining us to talk about the Ramblers, their first-round matchup with Georgia Tech, and everything in between, she is the co-sports editor for the student newspaper, the Loyola Phoenix. Abby Schnabel is here. Abby, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing really good. Happy to have you on. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is I saw a tweet you had after Loyola beat Drake in the Missouri Valley Championship. You were actually a freshman when they made the Final Four a couple years ago. So I want to know just your excitement around this team. And is there any major similarities, differences between that team and the team currently right now?
Yeah, so I was a freshman in 2018, so it's kind of crazy that I'm a senior and they're going again. I didn't actually get to, I wasn't covering the team that year. I was honestly more of a fan that year than anything. But it's kind of cool and kind of full circle that it's happening again. But as far as like similarities and differences, like I people keep talking about like which team's better, which team would beat the other, and genuinely like I have a really hard time answering that question because the teams are so just different, even though they're built off like, you know, Cameron Crutwig, Lucas Williamson are similarities on the teams. The team in 2018 was so offensively focused and they were just so like confident in shooting, and not saying that the 2021 team isn't. It's just the defense of the 2021 team is their big story. I mean, I believe they're still first in defensive scoring in the nation, and it's a huge part as to why they're ranked, huge part as to why they are in the tournament. And I think that just like makes it interesting because I don't know if the 2018 team could go ahead and get past the 2021 team's defense, and I don't know if the 2021 team could defend the 2018. So it's kind of a catch-all, but it's genuinely really fun to kind of get to see like how much the team has grown in the past 3 years, but I genuinely couldn't say one is better than the other for sure.
It's interesting you say that because I think back to that 2018 team, and I remember in the NCAA tournament just a lot of low-scoring games outside of maybe the three-point show they had in the Elite Eight against Kansas State. So it's kind of interesting to hear that this defense could be better than that defense, because that defense is really good.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Not saying that, like, the 2018 team didn't have, like, great defense. I just remember a lot more of their offensive plays than their defensive plays, whereas, like, the 2021 team, I could tell you so many more defensive moves that they've made compared to offensive moves. And so, yeah, they definitely were low scoring in 2018, but they also just had that clutch gene in which they were able to get out of those precarious situations at just the right moment. And I don't know if this team has that.
So let's take a look at the two players you said that you could probably ask that question to, and they probably give you an interesting answer. First with Cameron Crutwick, who I think he's going to have to play a huge matchup, a huge part in this game going up against Moses Wright and Georgia Tech. What do you make of what Crutwig's done for this team this season and his growth, not only on the court, but now being a leader as one of those two players that were on that team a few years ago?
Cameron Crutwig was good his freshman year, and he's just gotten better and better each year. It's honestly just really fun to get to watch him because Loyola typically doesn't have, like, true centers. And even though they call Cameron a true center, he's so much more than just that down low guy because he really is, like, a playmaker for the team. I mean, you've probably seen it, like, at the top of the key all the time, making those passes. He doesn't lead in assists, but he's pretty high up there. And it's just really interesting to get to see, like, how he's progressed and how he went from just being this guy who was, like, able to score to literally, like you said, leading the team. I mean, it's really hard for teams to guard him, and when they do guard him, Loyola has a little bit of a hard time getting out of trouble. And so it's interesting to see how, like, Loyola is very team oriented, but they also are very Cameron Crutwig oriented. And so that's my biggest concern heading into March Madness is if a team can shut Cameron Crutwig down, I think Loyola can get out of it. I mean, if they play like they did in the Arch Madness tournament, but that's the difference between the 2018 team and this one is, like, yes, it's different guys, different nights, no matter what year you're looking at, but more times than not, Cameron Crutwig is that leading scorer. And I don't know. I just don't know how these bigger teams, like Georgia Tech, like Illinois are how Cameron Crutwig is going to do against them. I'm very interested to see because I've been talking to a lot of people who follow, like, and have followed basketball longer than I've been alive. And there are a lot of people that think that the Power Five teams aren't really going to be able to handle Loyola's defense. And that's what I'm most excited for.
Let's talk about guard play a little bit. We know the tournament guards are always tend to be the central focus. This is a really relatively unknown backcourt from a few years ago. Give me the idea of what this Rambler's backcourt looks like. And this is a team that really, I'm looking at their stats, only, I mean, it's weird to say only 200 threes made, but they're not, it doesn't sound like they're a team that relies a lot on the perimeter game.
No, I would agree with you. Most of their points are definitely in the paint. With the guards, I mean, Loyola's very guard heavy. You see them, they start three guards, one forward and a center. I think what's interesting about their guards is that, like, each guy brings something kind of different to the team. Like, Braden Norris is the go-to point guard, but he also is pretty solid on the three. Tate Hall brings a lot of the, like, aggressiveness and the energy there and, like, makes a lot of those clutch plays. I think back to the Drake game last weekend and, like, I mean, he knocked two guys over, like, bowling pins trying to get a ball, and it was just such a solid play. And you got Lucas Williamson, who's just, I mean, defensive player of the year for the Valley and just so defensively oriented. And I think, yes, like you said, their three-point game isn't the best and isn't their main focus, but I think that's okay because, like, they're able to get those points from inside because going back to the defense, like, they're able to get those steals, able to get the ball away from their opponent and create, like, points. I don't know the exact stat, but the amount of points off of turnovers has to be astronomical, because there's so many games where I remember pointing that out in my story, because Loyola is just so good at forcing turnovers, and that stems back to their guards. Their guards are so just hungry to try and get the ball back over. And like, what's also super cool is each of them can score. Each of them can hit a three. Each of them can hit a jumper, whatever it is. And like, it just genuinely depends on the night, which is not great having to say going into March Madness, but like thinking back to Arch Madness, 2 to 4 players scored in double digits every single game. So if they can play like they did in Arch Madness, I mean, I think that 3 will be better, and I think they've got a chance.
Yeah, Williamson, you think about a guy, like you said, defensive player of the year in the conference. I can't think of a test that would make him potentially more nationally known than the possibility to go up against Alvarado in round 1, DeSomo in round 2, and maybe even Cunningham in the Sweet 16. That's a trifecta of great guard play that is going to make Williamson earn huge kudos around the country, or those offensive guards just going to make plays. I think that could be just a big story, is like trying to contain these top scorers, because Wright's great for Georgia Tech, but Alvarado seems it's like that machine that makes them go both offensively and defensively.
Absolutely. I think Williamson's got a quite the fight ahead of him, and will prove why he is Defensive Player of the Year and why he is so good at what he does. I just like, I don't know how this team matches up against bigger teams like Georgia Tech, like Illinois, because you got to think, like, Loyola is a little bit smaller, and unfortunately the Valley wasn't like as good as it could be this year. Like, Drake was pretty good, but then they had their two guys go out. Lucas Williamson had his hands full in the Valley, and like, you saw both sides. You saw him really be able to shut guys like Roman Penn, Gage Prim, Hempel from Drake down. You really saw him able to get these guys low scoring. However, I don't know how that looks against guys like Wright, against Illinois, and whoever else like they play against, because I think Lucas Williamson has it in him, but sometimes, and we saw this in the Drake championship game, he gets a little too aggressive and he can get into early foul trouble. And I think that's where the issue is can he guard them and shut them down without getting frustrated, without drawing fouls? Because if he can do that, I like strongly believe he can guard anyone. And at the same time, like, Porter Moser preaches it, and it's a little bit of coach speak, but he preaches it pretty well, and I believe it, that it's not just one guy guarding guys like Wright. It's a whole team effort, and just like, I'm excited to see how they do. I think Georgia Tech is going to be a huge, like, test to their team. I mean, Georgia Tech has 4 guys scoring in double digits. Loyola only has 1 right now. But then you look at Georgia Tech's, like, Georgia Tech doesn't have the best rebounding, and Loyola has a lot of good rebounding. And I think however they do against Georgia Tech is going to really show you what this team is capable of moving forward.
So we talked about Crutley. We talked about Williamson. Give me an X factor that fans should be looking out for when they watch Loyola. Like, you've seen them every game this year. One guy that doesn't get a lot of love that you think can make a big difference this week.
Ooh, that's hard, because I could think of like 3 or 4. I'm going to go with Keith Clemens, I was between Keith Clemens and Braden Norris. And the reason I'm picking Keith Clemens is because I put him on my all-tournament team and he did not get on the all-tournament team, which is fine. He has just been – I talked about that clutch gene from the 2018 team, and he's that on this 2021 team. He has been making some insanely amazing plays, insanely well-timed 3-point shots. And, like, I think he is going to be that underground – not even underground, because a lot of fans do give him love, but I don't – I think he's going to come out and really show, like, what he's made of. I think back to before he came to Loyola, he won the junior college national championships, and now he's playing in March Madness, and he has really just shown like that he's a good ball handler, that he can shoot, that he can guard. And I just think like he'll really show up this weekend, whether that's defensively, offensively, or anywhere in between, because he's just a good player. He's so much fun to watch. And he brings a lot to the team, too.
Let's talk about the Ramblers head coach, Porter Moser, a coach that I remember from a year or two ago almost got the job at my alum, St. John's, and everybody was, like, not happy they were going to hire him. What could he do at a small school and go to a big school and do it? St. John's eventually hires Mike Anderson. We're now hearing, I know John Rothstein mentioned it, that maybe DePaul could be a possibility. Now DePaul fired their head coach. What do you like about Porter Moser and just his ability to now do this again with a different, almost a completely different group of players outside of the two that we've talked about, and his ability to have success at the school?
I think Porter Moser's just a stand-up guy that people can rally around, that his team can rally around. And I think he's the perfect level of, like, hard on them but supportive of the guys as well, that allows them to find that zone where they can push themselves in a positive manner and not shut down. And, like, I think that's the difference between Porter and some other coaches, because, yeah, when they lose, he gets frustrated. But he's so, and most coaches are, but focused on what's next. What do we have? But, like, not too far what's next. What's immediately next? Like, yesterday in the press conference following, like, the selection selection show, he was talking, people were asking him, how do you feel about potentially playing Illinois in the second round? And he was like, no, we're playing Georgia Tech on Friday, and that's what I'm focused on. And I think while that's annoying for some of us media who want to get the juicy quote about playing Illinois, I think that's such a good mentality to have, especially when you are coming in kind of, in my opinion, underseeded, and just coming in a little like an underdog. Like you said, can they make another Cinderella run? And I think he's just so good about getting those guys to rally around something. And I think that's why he's so good at what he does. And I don't think this team, even if it's the same guys, I don't think this team goes to March Madness if Porter Moser isn't coaching. And, like, that's the difference. Like, the only thing that has stayed the same is Porter Moser from 2018 to 2021. Yes, you still have Cameron Cartwig, and yes, you still have Lucas, but you cannot sustain this success like they did and go back without Porter Moser. I think back my sophomore year was my first time on the men's basketball beat, and everyone thought that they were going to go back to the tournament that year. And I genuinely thought that if they didn't go back to the tournament that year, we would be waiting another 20-something years until they went back. But it's because of Porter's resiliency and, like, his focus on just, like, making this program as great as it can be that they're able to go back 3 years later, even after, like, losing in the semifinals and then the quarterfinals in Arch. I think it's really easy to beat yourself up about that, but Porter doesn't let them. And I think that's what's beautiful about his coaching, is that he is so, don't beat yourself up. Let's just keep focusing on what we can do better.
So one of the things I was interested about, I'm interested to get your take on this, playing in Hinkle Fieldhouse, and you could have a good note about it that you tweeted that you could share with our listeners. I wonder, with the limited fan capacity, whether that benefits teams making upsets in this tournament. Now, Loyola beating Georgia Tech would not be an upset if you look at Vegas odds and things of that, and I think nobody would be surprised by it. But how do you expect this environment to play for Loyola's favor? Is it maybe against possibly the lack of upsets because the crowd's not a big buzz? From your experience covering games with limited to no crowds this year, what do you think could happen in this tournament?
Well, I'll start with the little note that you kind of teased. I'm working on a story about the freshman center, Jacob Hudson, who's kind of been Cameron Cartwright's backup for the past couple weeks. His family has ties to Butler and Hinkle Fieldhouse. His uncle played basketball at Butler, and his parents both are alumni at Butler. So I think Jacob Hudson's going to be very star-eyed and ready to show what he can do with his family ties to Hinkle Fieldhouse. I think limited crowd capacity isn't going to be much of a difference for Loyola. Loyola didn't have fans in their arena at all this year, and so they know how to win without fans. They know how to win with fans. They had the biggest showing at Arch Madness. I think it does benefit them that Indianapolis is so close to Loyola and so close to Chicago. It's only a 4-hour drive from us. And so I know a bunch of students that are planning to make the drive. I know a lot of the parents are planning to make the drive. So genuinely, I think it could end up favoring Loyola, even though limited fan attendance. But like the fans that are going to be there, I think will end up being mostly Loyola fans, and Loyola feeds off that crowd. Like Porter Moser feeds off that crowd. He's like in the middle of the game, like hyping up the crowd sometimes. And even though it's limited, like I don't think that's going to affect Loyola too much because they know what it is to play in an empty arena with no one cheering you on. But they also know how to do it. Like I think back, like, Porter Moser talks a lot about this season being the season you want to win because it shows how much adversity you can face. And, like, these guys got COVID right at the beginning of the basketball season, like November 25th. Like, as they were told they could play, they got COVID and couldn't play. And, like, just seeing all that they've overcome, I don't see fans being a big, like, barrier in their way. I think they'll thrive if they have a lot there, but I think they'll thrive if they don't.
So looking at this matchup with Georgia Tech, one of the things I've been interested with Loyola this season, and I was thinking about it after they won the Missouri Valley Championship, is can they will a team, I won't say look at over them, but I don't think Loyola can surprise anybody this time. What do you think of that aspect of Loyola's team this year? And if you had to make a pick right now in this game, who do you think will win on Friday?
So I agree with you on the surprise factor because that's what Loyola was able to capitalize on going in 2018 is it was so surprising. No one expected them to do that. No one knew how to guard Cameron Cartwright because he's so unique. But now Cameron Cartwright's 4 years in. And, I mean, I've seen it the past 3 years. MVC teams figured out how to guard him. And there have been games where he's been shut down. And so, like, I don't think they have the surprise factor going for them like they did in 2018 because not only are they an 8 seed, they're ranked. They've been on people's radars for a couple months now. So it's harder to kind of like sneak in and like play sneaky and kind of surprise people with that because they have been pretty well talked about this year. That being said, I go back to the fact that, like, I don't know if a lot of Power 5 teams know how to shoot against them because their defense is just so unique. And that's the element that I think could be surprising is teams are going to underestimate their defense and think, oh, yeah, well, we know how to defend against them. But their defense is so adaptable. And so just fun to watch because of how much easily they can shift gears to something. And so I think if anything's going to surprise people, it's going to be that aspect. If I have to pick a winner right now, I'm going to go with Loyola, which, like you said, not according to Vegas odds and seeding, isn't a surprise. I'm going with Loyola because even though I haven't had the opportunity to see Georgia Tech play. Looking at their stat sheet, yeah, they got 4 guys in double digits, but the way Loyola gets their points, the way Loyola gets the ball is rebounds. Like, rebounds and assists are huge for Loyola. And, like, just comparing Georgia Tech to Loyola and those stats alone, Loyola out-rebounds and out has more assists than them. And I think that's going to be the difference is, yes, Georgia Tech can shoot, and they've got guys who can shoot, but can they get the ball away from Loyola? Can they grab those 50-50 balls like Loyola can? And granted, I have a big asterisk on this because it really just depends on if Loyola can hit a shot because sometimes they can and sometimes they can't. And I think against a team like Georgia Tech, you have to be both offensively and defensively present. Loyola skated by a lot this year because they've been defensively solid and the other team's offense just wasn't there, but neither was Loyola's. And their defense has won them a lot of games. I think their defense and their offense has to be there this weekend on Friday. But my gut just says Georgia Tech won't be able to figure out their defense. I keep going back to it, and I'm sorry I'm so repetitive about that. But I just look, like, when you got 4 guys in double digits, That's a lot of guys. However, I'm sure Porter Moser has his guys like scanning in on those guys right now. Sitting down, okay, Moses, Alvarado, DeVoe, Usher, looking at them, like, how can we guard them? And Loyola is really good at shutting down individuals. And considering Georgia Tech, from the stats, doesn't look that great with ball movement. Again, from the stats, I haven't seen them play yet. I think that's where Loyola is going to come in and be able to beat them.
So Porter Moser can't look ahead, but very quickly, I think you can. If a potential second-round matchup were to happen between Illinois and Loyola Chicago, which would be a really fun local narrative, can this team compete with Illinois, you think?
See, that's the big question. People keep asking me that. My gut says no. My gut says the season will be over after this weekend. But genuinely, like, this Loyola team, even in the past 4 years, surprises people. And I think they could win. The odds are very much stacked against them, and they have to be playing well all 40 minutes of the game on both sides of the court. I don't think it's a blowout game. I think they give Illinois a lot of grief. I think it's a close game, whether that's 5 points close game or 10 points. I consider 10 points close game because that's still only 5 buckets in the grand scheme of things. I think Loyola's going to give Illinois a run for their money, but Illinois is so good. Like, I just can't get past the fact that they're just that good, and that makes me nervous. And like I said, my gut says I don't see Loyola making it past Illinois. But you never know. It's March. Anything can happen. And that's a kind of a cop-out answer. But, I mean, I got Illinois winning that matchup, but wouldn't surprise me if Loyola was able to pull it out.
So if you want to give picks, feel free. I won't hold you to them. But I like to take a look at the region as a whole in the Midwest. I think Matt Norlander from CBS has, like, the region of doom. You've got Houston. Houston's a good two, but not probably the lowest two. West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Tennessee when healthy is good. San Diego State's another good quote unquote mid-major. West Virginia's good. Give me your first round matchup in the Midwest besides Loyola Georgia Tech that you're most interested in checking out.
Just the Midwest? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to throw another one out there, you can. But I kind of want to try to keep it in the region, so to speak.
Absolutely. I just was curious because my family's big Mizzou people, and so, like, we were really hoping Loyola and Mizzou would end up matching up against each other. So I was just going to throw that out there. But looking, I think – ooh, this is such a good – I actually haven't had the chance to, like, sit down and look at the entire bracket, so I'm just now doing it. Oh, man, this is the division of doom or whatever you called it. I'm going to say the game that I am excited for, and this might be a hot take. I don't know. I haven't been on Twitter enough in the past 24 hours to look. San Diego State and Syracuse I think will be a fun game because I've watched Syracuse play a bunch this year, and I think they've been pretty consistent. And 11-6, like going back to 2018, Loyola pulled it off, so there's no reason Syracuse can't. But like San Diego State's fun. I wouldn't care who won. I think that game would just be pretty well like played and just be like a fun basketball game to watch.
Yeah, that is intriguing, largely because Syracuse tends to thrive as the underdog more often than not, and San Diego State, very good program in the Mountain West that never really has gotten over the hump since Kawhi Leonard was there. So I think that would be a real fun matchup. The other one I like, Tennessee-Oregon State, I think is interesting because Oregon State's getting hot. And Tennessee, one of their players, Fulkerson, had a head injury that caused him to miss the semifinal against Alabama. If he doesn't play, Oregon State could be one of those trendy 12s that's starting to find its groove at the right time. Last question I have before I let you go, since you cover the Missouri Valley, Drake's in the first four. I know some view it as a controversial selection, but I'm glad the committee rewarded mid-major success in a year where you couldn't really schedule big-time schools because of COVID. How good is Drake, and if they get by Wichita State, can they beat USC in your mind?
Drake is good, especially with the fact that they'll have Hempel back Hemel was their second leading scorer all season, and he was out the entire tournament and most of the last 2 weeks, or most of the end of the season. And so Drake was good without him, and Drake with him, I'm a little nervous for Wichita State. I'm really excited about the matchup in general because it's Wichita State, former Valley team, with Drake, current Valley team. I think the teams are pretty evenly matched. I was one of the people who were like, Drake should be in no matter what. Like, they should absolutely get the at-large. So I was very grateful that the selection committee decided to put them in because I think they deserve to be there. See, that's just difficult because, like, I look back to last week and how they pulled up against Missouri State to go to the final. And then, I mean, they kept it close with Loyola. It wasn't a runaway game by any means. And that's without Hempel, having Hempel back in. I think it'll be close. Personally, I think Wichita State will win. I want Drake to win. I don't think Drake could beat USC, but it's March. You never know.
Did they not have Hempel in the other two regular season matchups with Loyola too? I'm quickly looking at it as well. That's a big deal for that.
Yeah, they didn't have Hempel in any of the Loyola games. They had Penn in both of them. Penn's out for the season. Penn you won't see again, but they didn't have Hempel. They didn't have Hempel against Loyola, but they still beat Loyola in that second game without him. But you got to remember, they did have Penn, who was their leading scorer all year against Loyola. So I think Hempel definitely makes a difference, and I think that's the big reason where I'm kind of like, Drake could do it. My only thing is, like, yes, this team without Hempel is good. But, like, they got gassed out pretty quickly. You need another high-energy guy like Hempel to keep them in the game. And that's the only reason I'm, like, on the fence. But my gut says Wichita State, and I usually try and go with my gut when it comes to March.
It's a scary thing. I tend to overthink picks as well, and then end up like, yeah, I thought that, but I didn't put it to the paper, yeah, the online site I put the bracket on. So you always got to go with your gut sometimes. But Abby, again, thanks for hopping on. Well, let the listeners know how they can follow you on Twitter, how they can follow the paper on Twitter. I understand you'll be in Indianapolis, or Hinkle Fieldhouse, which should be cool. Tell listeners out there how they can follow all the coverage you're doing.
Absolutely. So I am at Abby Schnabel, spelled S-C-H-N-A-B-L-E. I'm the only one. It shouldn't be difficult to find. And then our paper is putting out a lot of great Loyola-centric content with, and we're at LU Phoenix Sports. So you can find us there.
So definitely be sure to check out Abby's coverage. One more thing, Abby, real quick. What's it been like this year covering your school in where it's been really tough to even have in-person classes, let alone cover college basketball? I've been asking all the student reporters I have on the show this season and for the special. What's it been like covering this team, or just covering any team, in a unique year such as this?
Basketball has been the only normalcy in my life. I've gotten to go to games. I got to go to Arch, and it's been great. Even though I didn't get to sit courtside, like, still getting to go, getting to watch basketball, I realize how lucky I am to have that sense of normalcy. I don't have any classes in person, so really most of my senior year has been spent in my apartment at my computer. But just getting to go and cover has been really beneficial to me, and getting to spend, like, one last real thing for my senior year, because we don't get an in-person graduation. It's kind of like, I'm treating it kind of like my last hurrah, because it is the last kind of like normal thing I'll get. And that's why it was so huge when I found out, like, I got credentialed, because credentials are super hard to get with COVID right now. And knowing that, like, I get to go to Hinkle Fieldhouse. It's another blessing in this thing that is the pandemic, because you don't get a lot of wins, but basketball season has been one giant win for me personally, just having that normalcy, because it really hasn't been different for me. I've been covering the team just as much as I would in a regular year, and yeah, it's been weird. Credentials are harder to get. You got to wear a mask everywhere. You can't go on the court and all of that jazz, but it's worth it. And I'm lucky that I get the opportunity to go in person. And it's just, it's been great. It's been great.
So be sure to check out Abby's work throughout the tournament and what should be one of the, I think one of the more intriguing first round games in this entire tournament between the Ramblers and the Ramblin' Wreck. So fitting Loyola and Georgia Tech would face each other in round one. Abby, thanks for hopping on. Keep up the great work. Good luck in covering the team in Indianapolis and or in Hinkle Fields in Indiana. And hopefully we'll talk again soon. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
I love this Loyola Georgia Tech matchup. Going to be a real fun one. Next, we go to the Big 12. We go to the East Region, one of two schools that we talked to from the Big 12. And I wanted to look at Texas, 3 seed in the East Region. They play Abilene Christian in the first round. They should win that game. But I wanted to look at the East Region because it's wide open, because with Isaiah Livers being out for Michigan indefinitely with the stress fracture in his foot, how that changes his bracket. You've got Alabama, who won the SEC regular season and conference tournament. You've got Florida State, who finished second in the ACC, made to the ACC tournament championship game. You got Texas as a potential 6 seed. Not Texas, BYU is a 6 seed that could play Texas. But Shaka Smart's in this tournament. We all know Shaka Smart's history being in this tournament. He took VCU to the Final Four. And what you love about Texas is their guard play. Matt Coleman is one of the better guards to watch. He kind of out-dueled Cade Cunningham in the Big 12 championship game. They've got Andrew Jones, who's a great story. Courtney Ramey is a very good player as well. Jericho Sims playing well in the paint. And yes, a Texas-Alabama Sweet 16 matchup can happen in basketball, not just football. You got a couple of those, by the way. You look at the South region. You could get a Florida-Ohio State second-round game. Now, we've seen that as college basketball fans before in a national championship game, which I remember very well because one of the years I actually did great on my bracket. I picked Ohio State to get to the championship, but I thought they'd actually beat Florida. That was the Greg Oden, Mike Conley Buckeyes against the Noah Horford, the Corey Brewer Florida squad. It was really good. But Texas is one of the intriguing teams getting hot at the right time. They won the Big 12 championship for the first time, conference tournament-wise. They did kind of benefit from Kansas not being able to play that semifinal game, but Texas did beat Kansas handily in Lawrence earlier in the year, and that's where I first got impressed with them. So coming up next, you will hear my conversation with with Stephen Wagner. Stephen is the associate sports editor for the Daily Texan. We dive into Texas guard play, the improvement of Jericho Sims on offense, the Big 12, Shaka Smart, and how is Texas match up with Alabama, if that is a Sweet 16 matchup. We're going to have some fun with that, as well as our favorite matchups in the East region. So stay tuned for my conversation with Stephen as we are almost halfway through the Kicking with Keeler Bracket Palooza special. We continue our look at some of the top teams in this NCAA tournament with a look in the East region and a coach you might be familiar with from his run at a mid-major, but now trying to make the same run at a major program. And joining us today to talk about the Texas Longhorns, the 3 seed in the East region. He is the associate sports editor from the Daily Texan, which is Texas's student newspaper. Stephen Wagner is here. Stephen, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, Ricky. Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you. So Texas, one of those teams, Stephen, coming into this NCAA tournament on a great note, winning the Big 12 Conference Tournament Championship, arguably the Big 12, the second best conference in college basketball behind the Big 10, depending on who you ask. What did you make of Texas's season and the way that they're playing heading into March Madness?
Yeah, Texas's season was a little bit of a roller coaster, but I think it says a lot about the team, just the way they dealt with the challenges that they had to overcome. You know, like you look at the big picture of things, they get off on that incredibly hot, great start. You know, they win the Maui Invitational. They beat Kansas by 25 in Lawrence, which, you know, is literally unheard of. But then, you know, they had that shutdown where they did have a string of positive COVID tests. Shaka Smart even missed a game because he had COVID, and they went on a little bit of a rough streak, you know. They started off 10-1, then went 4-6 after that for a little while. But it seems like now they're really on an upswing as far as, you know, momentum goes. They won their last three games to close the regular season. They dismantled a bad Iowa State team. And then they beat Oklahoma and TCU, all three on the road. And then, of course, as you know, they won the Big 12 tournament. So, you know, Texas, a three seed, you know, it's their highest seeding since it's their first top three seeding since 2008. It's their highest seeding since, you know, I can't really remember when, but this is a team that I think really is poised to do some damage whenever you look at their bracket and you look at, you know, what a potential road to the Elite Eight or even the Final Four might look like.
We'll definitely get into that as this segment goes on. I want to take a look at Shaka Smart. We all know at Texas, there's a lot of pressure on the football coach, as Tom Herman figured out. But basketball, Shaka Smart came in with a lot of fanfare when he became the coach. Has the pressure eased off him a little bit, or is there still pressure to make a deep run into the second week and maybe even the Final Four this year?
I think the pressure's definitely eased off a little bit. You know, how do you fire a coach, or how do you be mad at a coach that swept Kansas for the first time in school history and became only the second school ever to sweep Kansas under Bill Self, and then won the conference tournament? You know, it's one of those deals. How are you upset at a guy like that? You know, I definitely think that there is still some outside pressure on him. Like, there's still some residual effects. You know, just whenever you look at the frustration that the fan base has been through under his tenure, you know, I was talking to Pete Gillen a few weeks ago, and I asked him what he thought the expectation at a program like Texas should be. And he said, you know, you should make the tournament every 3 or 4 years, and every now and then you should make a run at the Sweet 16. Well, you know, Shaka Smart hasn't won a tournament game in 6 years at Texas. Well, this is his sixth year. Yeah, I think he'll probably end up winning at least one tournament game this season. But, you know, that first year, they lost on, you know, just kind of a miraculous, fluky buzzer beater to Northern Iowa. You know, that half-court heave as time expired. And then in 2018, they lost his third year. They lost to Nevada. They blew a 14-point second half lead. So, you know, that has stuck with the fan base a little bit, on top of the fact that they've just, you know, straight up missed the tournament. You know, in some cases, you know, they've either been bubble teams or they've missed it by quite a bit in other years. So, you know, the fan base is still a little, I kind of want to say skeptical, if that's the right word, going into this year's tournament. You know, there's I feel like there are still like quite a few skeptics like within the fan base who are still like uncertain of, you know, Shaka's ability. But you look at the regular season, you know, they finished in the top 10 for the first time in school, for the first time under Shaka Smart in the AP poll. You know, they're their highest seed in well over a decade. I don't want to say the pressure's completely off of him, but I would say that it's died down. But I will say that I think that if Shaka only wins one game in the tournament and then loses to BYU in either Michigan State or UCLA in the second round, I do think that he would be back on the hot seat.
So when we talk about the NCAA tournament, we usually look at guard play, and experience tends to be the two things people look at when filling out their bracket sheet. And Texas has three very experienced and talented guards in Andrew Jones, Rick Ramey, and Matt Coleman. Tell listeners a little bit about what stands out when those guys are on the court, and do you think that experience in the backcourt could pay off for this team, maybe getting to a second week in the Final Four?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not sure where to start with those three guys. You know, I want to compare them to an NBA team, but I can't think of an NBA team that has, you know, three strictly guards that play as well with each other as they do. I mean, you know, like the Spurs back in their heyday, whenever they had Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili, were pretty good, except, you know, Duncan really wasn't a perimeter guy. Ramey, Jones, and Coleman all are. You know, then experience is, you know, an extreme understatement. Matt Coleman's been a 4-year starter. He's a senior this year. Andrew Jones, everybody knows the story about him and everything he went through with his leukemia treatments. And a really, really touching story about how he battled his way back to the court. But, you know, the roster effect on that is he's now by far the oldest guy on the team. He's what, like 23, 24, something like that, because of effectively the 2 seasons that he missed while he was battling leukemia. He was able to pick up medical redshirts for both of those seasons. And so you look at that age and that experience and that level of basketball savvy that those two guys are bringing. And then you add in another guy like Courtney Ramey, who, you know, is a little bit more of a true scorer, but he really toes the line well between scorer and facilitator. You know, whenever Matt Coleman's out, Ramey's able to run the offense really, really effectively. He's able to run it really, really smoothly. But I think the biggest area where, you know, Courtney Ramey's grown specifically is now he doesn't need to score in order to be productive and to have a positive impact on his teammates on the court. So, you know, whenever Matt Coleman's out, and if Ramey's not particularly having a great day, like we saw in the Big 12 tournament, he did struggle in the Big 12 tournament, but, you know, he was still able to find ways to get his teammates involved and, you know, get his teammates going and find ways to still facilitate the offense. And then you pair those three guys with, you know, a few athletic interior big men like Kai Jones and, Jericho Sims. And, you know, you kind of start thinking to yourself, the sky's the limit, especially if the guards play the way that they did or at least if one of the guards plays the way that they did in the Big 12 tournament. You know, Matt Coleman dropped 30, a new career high in the Big 12 championship game. So, you know, if Texas can get at least that kind of production from one of its guards and the other two can at least like chip in a little bit with scoring and, you know, get some teammates involved, Texas is a team that definitely has potential to make a big run. I'm not going to say that they will, and I'm not going to say how I filled out my bracket, but I will say that I think they have the potential for it.
Won't get into that yet, but I kind of might want to have you give a little insight to that a little bit later. But let's talk about Jericho Sims, one of the players you just mentioned, a guy that very good around the rim, but double doubles in each of the two Big 12 championship games that Texas played against Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. Sims is one of those guys, I think, in the paint, he's going to be an enforcer with his block shots. What have you made of his improved offensive performance, double figures in the last 4 games and double doubles in 3 of the last 4?
You know, this is the character that Shaka Smart, this is the athlete, this is the player that Shaka Smart has been waiting, it seems like the last 3 years to finally get. You know, Jericho was a little bit more of a project. He came in with that 2017 recruiting class, but also had Matt Coleman and Mo Bamba, who were both 5-star players. I think Matt Coleman is probably going to have a shot at playing in the NBA. We all know Mo Bamba was a lottery pick. And then the following year, Jackson Hayes kind of comes out of nowhere, blossoms into a lottery pick overnight. And, Jericho, you know, really didn't have that same level of success, like, at all. His freshman year was a little bit rough at times. You know, it was a little bit shaky, and you compared him to this giant gazelle, that's just so, you know, put together and has such an advanced game, like Mo Bamba. And, you know, you're kind of wondering to yourself, you know, what was Shaka doing recruiting this guy? But, you know, to Jericho's credit, he stuck with it. You know, he could have quit and given up and kind of pouted, whenever he was benched a couple of times during his first 2 years, in favor of different lineups and different rotations that were a little bit more centered around guys like Mo Bamba and Jackson Hayes. But he really, really stuck with it. Last year, he had a much improved year, and then this year he's just been, you know, fantastic. Offensively, I've heard quite a few people compare him to Shaq, and you know, I feel like that's I feel like that honestly might be a little bit that might be kind of an accurate comparison. You know, in terms of like their actual games, you know, you're talking about, you know, two almost 7 foot athletic freaks who have just packed out, who have just packed on tons and tons and tons of muscle. You know, like that's the thing that really sets Jericho aside is, or that separates Jericho from the rest of the pack is, especially in the paint. He's just become so much more aggressive and so much more assertive, and he's really learned how to use his size. His footwork's really, really improved too. You know, he's developed a nice post hook from time to time. But really, and we saw a lot of this in the Big 12 tournament, is he's really just starting to use his size and his strength to just overpower people in the paint. You know, if I can't get around you, I'm going to go through you. And he's doing that to really, really great extremes. But, you know, offensively, he's well improved. But I think where his true value reigns is on his defense and, you know, strictly the defense that he's able to play on guards. You know, just his ability to switch on to guards, I think makes him, you know, really, really valuable as a defender and valuable to Shaka Smart's entire defensive scheme. And yeah, I think that's something that's really, really going to give Texas a lot of, I think that's something that's really going to play dividends for Texas, once they start playing these teams that, you know, are known for having, exceptional guards.
So one of the things, when I look at Texas's draw in the East region, and they do have, if I look at the ESPN odds just for entertainment purposes, the lowest spread in terms of a 3 seed. I think it's like about 8.5 over Abilene Christian. They should win that game though. So looking at a potential second round game between, like you said, either BYU, who has good guard play, and Harnes in the paint would be interesting against Sims, and either Tom Izzo, Michigan State, or Mick Cronin and UCLA, two very good coaches. So I'll ask you this on Texas. What could be the one thing that causes them to have an early tournament exit?
I mean, you look at their, if you look at their losses, the two things that have really, really hurt them, in their upset losses, and, you know, I say upset, but they haven't truly been upset this year. They haven't lost a game to an unranked opponent yet. But what really hurt them in their losses was at times shooting. And the other one, the really, really big one that I think you just can't overlook is, free throw shooting. Their free throw shooting against Baylor, they had a matchup in Austin against number one Baylor, in which they actually led, in the second half before Baylor went on a run kind of late. You know, you look at that game, you look at that stat line, and what really killed them was free throw shooting. I think they were something atrocious. I feel like it was like 2 of 11 or maybe 3 of 12 or something like that from the free throw line. You know, it just absolutely killed them. You know, they went through something similar whenever they blew that big second half lead to West Virginia. They shot the ball really poorly in the second half. They turned it over a lot. You know, the thing that Shaka Smart has really preached a lot of has just been, kind of connectivity within his team. You know, he always says, you know, well, the most connected team is going to win. I'm not going to necessarily say that I agree with that, because I will admit that Texas has gotten lucky in a few games. You look at their win against Kansas in Austin that completed the sweep. Kansas had an opportunity to tie that game, you know, in the final 15 seconds of the overtime period. And a player dribbled the ball off his foot while he was going to the basket for the potential game-tying layup. And it was wide open too, so I think he probably would have made it. But, you know, if I'm looking at, you know, like the tools for an upset, I would say, you know, if I'm another team, I would really, really, really want to attack the paint early and often, try to get those bigs in as much foul trouble as they can. Do everything you can to try to keep Greg Brown on the floor, because, you know, Greg Brown definitely hasn't been the piece that I think everybody thought he was going to be. He's not nearly as developed as everybody thought he was going to be. And lately, just especially with where his confidence has been, he's been a real liability. He's had a negative plus minus in, you know, like his last X games. But on top of that, you know, if you can run the guards off the 3-point line, if you can limit at least Andrew Jones, you know, I'm not really sure if you can limit Matt Coleman and Courtney Ramey, but we've seen, you know, teams in the second halves of games kind of start to figure out how to limit Andrew Jones a little bit. And you know, force some turnovers, try to, you know, you not necessarily control the tempo, but at least, you know, give unique pressure looks that maybe, you know, Texas is a little bit unfamiliar with, or maybe run some of the stuff that Texas Tech has run against them before. You know, I think that's how you pull off an upset is, you know, kind of the standard formula, get them in foul trouble, play good defense and then, you know, force turnovers and see if Texas misses free throw shots.
So with the strength of the Big 12 has had, it was like 7 ranked teams by the end of the season. So I'll ask you this, playing in the Big 12, advantage or disadvantage going into the tournament, considering all the tough games that Texas has seemingly played the entire year?
Tremendous advantage. Texas has had an excellent strength of schedule coming into the year. You know, you look at, like you said, you look at the slate that they had to run through. They never got their second matchup with Baylor, which I think, you know, we were all disappointed that we never saw. But, you know, you play Texas Tech twice. They're a 6 seed. You know, you play West Virginia twice. You play Kansas twice. You play Oklahoma twice. You know, you play all these really good teams twice. And I think that absolutely hands down prepares you for something like March Madness. And, you know, you couple that with the fact that Texas hasn't lost to an unranked opponent yet. You know, they don't have a bad loss. It hasn't necessarily been this year. Before the Big 12 tournament, it wasn't necessarily that Shaka Smart hadn't won the big game. It was that he hadn't lost the little one. You know, I can't remember the last time that Texas basketball went through a regular season without, you know, being truly upset. You know, they lost to some lower ranked teams, but, you know, those are still ranked opponents nonetheless. But you look at their bracket and you look at the matchups that they've drawn, you know, playing against BYU and either Michigan State or UCLA in the second round, if they make it to the second round. You know, I tend to think that that's a matchup that probably would end up favoring Texas. And then, you know, they could potentially link up with Alabama in the Sweet 16, which I think is going to be an excellent game if that ends up happening. But just glancing over the schedule, yeah, it seems like, or glancing over the bracket, it seems like Texas really has an opportunity to make at least a Sweet 16 run here.
Yeah, I think that's one of the matchups I looked at. The Texas-Alabama potential Sweet 16. No, this is not a beast. This is not a BCS or college football playoff. It would be an actual Sweet 16 college basketball game. But that's the thing I'm interested in, is if Alabama, who's been deep all season, they're hitting threes, they're playing great defense. I kind of think, and it's very early, and we don't know the status of when Isaiah Livers or Michigan might come back. They're a different team without him, although, to be fair, they almost beat Ohio State without him, so they're still pretty good. But Florida State's also good, as well as the four in this region. Is it fair to say that maybe the Texas-Alabama winner could be in the Final Four?
Yes, I think that's a really, really fair thing to say. You know, I will, you know, say that whenever I was filling out my bracket, you know, if you look at that matchup, if you look at those lines, Texas and Alabama absolutely have the easiest path to the Final Four. You know, Texas isn't going to play a team that finished the season ranked until potentially the Sweet 16. And, you know, the same goes for Alabama. Although, you know, they did draw Rick Pitino in the first round, which, you know, nobody ever likes. But they both have really, really favorable matchups. The winner of, if, you know, whoever gets to the Sweet 16 between Texas and Alabama, you know, I think, you know, they could potentially end up playing Michigan in the Elite Eight. You know, it looks like that's probably the way that this is going to go because, you know, my personal thought is that the East bracket overall is the weakest bracket or is the weakest part of the bracket to be put into. So, you know, I think there's a really, really good chance that whoever wins the Sweet 16, and my thought is that it's probably going to be Texas or Alabama, is going to have a great shot to knock off Michigan. You know, we've seen Michigan kind of, you know, they've been great this season. Don't get me wrong. But I definitely felt like they missed Isaiah Livers against Ohio State.
And I would not count out Florida State either in this, especially if they play Michigan. Leonard Hamilton, I think, has gotten these Seminoles teams on some good runs over the last couple of years. They played Michigan, I think, a couple of years ago in the Sweet 16 or somewhere in the regional portion of the bracket, and they finished second in the ACC, so it's tough to really count them out in this equation. Let's look at the first round in this region. So I'll ask you this. Give me a first-round game that isn't Texas that you're most intrigued to watch in the East.
I'm really, really excited to watch Georgetown and Colorado. You know, Georgetown's a team that is red hot. You know, they won the Big East with the lowest regular season win percentage of any team ever. You know, they were in eighth place in their conference going into the tournament, and they upset Villanova, and then they absolutely just demolished Seton Hall and Creighton in the semifinal and championship games. You know, they are red hot. It's kind of a starved, I wouldn't call them blue blood program, but certainly a program that has a lot of basketball winning tradition. You know, they haven't had a ton of success under Patrick Ewing. They haven't been to the NCAA tournament in a while. I feel like Georgetown, you know, they might be a 12 seed, but, you know, if I'm opposing coaches, I'm treating them like probably a 4 seed or a 5 seed. Just, you know, when you consider how well they're playing right now, the way that they dismantled those teams in the Big East tournament. Good teams too. You know, Villanova is not a slouch. You know, they've kind of developed into a basketball powerhouse the last few years. You know, neither is Creighton. Creighton's is a pretty good team too. So I really, really, really like Georgetown a lot out of the East. I think that's your potential Cinderella team.
Georgetown, I'm really intrigued by to see if they continue that momentum. A couple of the ones I like, LSU-St. Bonaventure should be a really good game. St. Bonaventure's defense against LSU's offense, and kind of leaning the Bonnies in that one. I think the other one I like is the 7-10, UConn against Maryland, because I think these are two teams that kind of go under the radar that could maybe wreak havoc on Alabama a little bit if they're on an off day, because you've got Maryland with Eric Ayala in the backcourt. This is a good, if you like guards, Maryland, Connecticut, I think is the matchup you want to watch. With Ayala, I think Wiggins as well for Maryland, and Bucknight for Connecticut. When they have him healthy, they're a different basketball team. So I think this one could be a really interesting sleeper if you're looking for one. If you want to pick somebody against Alabama, because Alabama's the trendy pick, keep an eye on Maryland, Connecticut. I think that'll be a pretty interesting basketball game. Let's keep it, Stephen, in the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
We know Baylor's really good. A lot of Big 12 teams are really good. But let's take Baylor out of the discussion because they should make a deep run. They're number one seed. They've only lost 2 games the entire year.
Right.
Big 12 team besides Texas you think has the chance to go the deepest in this tournament, besides Texas and Baylor?
I think it's going to be Oklahoma State. You know, Kansas is obviously Kansas. They're still really good. Nobody is denying that. They're a 3 seed for a reason. I think we were all a little bit disappointed that we never got to see that matchup between Texas and Kansas in the Big 12 championship game, in the Big 12 semifinal game. But I think Oklahoma State has a really, really great chance. You know, outside of Cade Cunningham, who, you know, is probably going to be the number one overall pick and has just been spectacular all season. You know, I think it's going to come down to him and Luka Garza for the Naismith Player of the Year award. Oklahoma State is a deceptively deep team. And when I say deceptively, I mean that just because everybody's eyes are naturally drawn to Cade Cunningham because he's just, you know, become such a star overnight, it seems like. You know, not a lot of people knew who this guy was who didn't very closely and very intensely follow basketball recruiting. You know, he didn't have, you know, some of the high school highlight tapes that, you know, maybe like Nico Mannion had coming into college, or, you know, Lonzo Ball or any of the Ball brothers had. But he's definitely a really, really special guy who's able to lead a team. But, you know, like I said, everybody's eyes are just drawn to him. You know, people forget that this is a team that does have a bench, and does have a great supporting cast. You know, the Boone brothers, they've been fantastic all season. They, I can't think of an interior post player that, you know, they haven't given at least some trouble to. You know, Jericho Sims, has struggled with him, or struggled with both of them, at times. During the regular season, I know he definitely struggled with him, in the home victory. I think he did a little bit better against them whenever they went on the road, but the Boone brothers are really good. Their point guard, I can't remember his first name, but Anderson has really, really developed, and they've got a good coach. Mike Boynton is a really, really, really good coach. You know, I'm personally really happy that we saw, that we were able to actually see Oklahoma State in the postseason. You know, the NCAA, I think, I'm not sure what's going on with their NCAA probe, but I know that they're able to play in the postseason. But that's a team that I think really has all of the components that you look for in a team that's going to make a deep tournament run. You know, they've got guard play. Cade Cunningham's a forward, but he plays like a guard. They've got great guard play. They've got a really, really good coach. And they have bigs who are able to, you know, be a supporting cast and fill that role very, very well. So, you know, behind Texas and maybe West Virginia, I think Oklahoma probably has, well, and obviously Baylor. I think Oklahoma State definitely has some of the better guards in the league.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma State a lot. The problem I'm having with them is, why did the committee have to put them in Illinois' bracket? Because Illinois is just so good defensively. I mean, the matchup to Somu against Cunningham, if that happens, Sweet 16, is absolutely must-see TV. I mean, I think other teams I'm looking – Kansas is a three, but I feel like they're like a – especially with their COVID concerns, I'm not sure how to look at them right now. And I think maybe that's what's maybe going to help Bill Self, maybe going under the radar as a three. And West Virginia is the – Bob Huggins actually has an offense. So I think them at a three, I think they was a little high. I would have flipped Oklahoma State and West Virginia, but West Virginia to me is pretty interesting in that bottom half of the bracket as well, especially when you consider Houston is the two in West Virginia's region. West Virginia could realistically make a good push for the Elite Eight.
Oh, they absolutely could. But, you know, going back to the Oklahoma State thing, I'm not saying that I don't like Kansas and I don't like and I don't like West Virginia, because obviously, you know, Kansas is still Kansas and West Virginia is still West Virginia. But if you look at the Midwest bracket, the bracket that Oklahoma State is in, yes, they would draw Illinois in the Sweet 16. But the way that I look at that is Oklahoma State is really the only team that threatens Illinois in this bracket. You know, Georgia Tech and Loyola Chicago, Illinois should be able to roll over both of those guys, in the second round. They should absolutely blow out Drexel in the first round of the tournament. But, you know, like the Oklahoma State guards, I think, are going to be as good as anybody that, that Illinois has seen all season. I think that's as good as anybody that they've seen in the Big Ten. I think that, you know, like Oklahoma State's definitely a team that can compete with anybody. And, you know, they proved this year that they can. You know, they did beat number one Baylor, number two Baylor. Oklahoma State is a team that has proven, you know, they're absolutely capable of pulling off the big upsets, because they have. So, you know, I think the way that I look at that is Oklahoma State is the one team in that bracket that Illinois really needs to be worried about, because other than that, I don't really see a challenger for Illinois. I think that there's a pretty good chance that we see a few upsets happen in the bottom portion of the Midwest bracket too.
The last question, Stephen, before I let you go. I've been asking all the reporters that have been on this special this question. What's it been like covering this team or this school in this craziness of a season?
I guess I'll use the word remote. it's been really, really strange and interesting. And, it's been a challenge at times to adapt to some of this stuff. Media availabilities are, very, very, very different. Interviews for feature stories, one-on-ones are basically non-existent. Instead of walking to the arena every single night, a lot of times you're just going to end up being at home on your couch with stat sheets pulled up in front of you, watching the game on TV like everybody else. And, you've got your roommate sitting next to you. And so, it just feels like a casual Tuesday night, aside from the fact that, you're on deadline and you're under a lot of stress to hurry up and write the story. But, it's been very, very unique. I'm certainly going to be happy whenever all of this is finally over and we're able to, return to full capacity and we're able to, the CDC says that it's safe to stop social distancing and it's fine to take masks off. I think normalcy is going to be something that we all look a lot forward to, but it's been a challenge at times, but it's been, I think, very, very, I think it's been very progressive in a few ways, in that we're learning different ways to adapt and we're learning that there are different and more efficient ways of doing things. I was making a joke with a friend the other day. I never thought that I would be able to wake up at 10:20 for a 10:30 press conference, just throw on a shirt, comb my hair, and sit down on Zoom with Shaka Smart and ask the questions that I need to ask and just run through the whole thing. That part is pretty nice, I'm not going to lie. But I think that we all do miss seeing each other in person. I was at, the head football coach, Steve Sarkisian, I was at his introductory press conference virtually, at all of his press conferences so far, he's always said, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in person. And I think the same can be said for basketball. I think we are all looking forward to seeing each other in person. And I think we are all sick of it. I think we're all tired of having to do this thing from home. And, me personally, I don't like being cooped up inside all day. I do enjoy getting out and just, interacting with other people because I am a people person. But, it's going to be one of those things that we're just going to be doing for a while. And so I think everybody's just trying to make the best of it that they can.
So tell listeners out there how they can follow your work, follow the work of the Daily Texan, how they can follow both the paper and you on Twitter, and anything else you want to plug for your coverage of the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. So my Twitter is at StephenWag22. That's StephenWag22 on Twitter. You can also follow the Daily Texan at the Daily Texan and at Texan Sports.
So be sure to give Stephen's coverage a follow during this tournament. Should be a fun run for Texas, one of the teams you might want to look into picking deep in your bracket in the East region. We'll see how it goes. Stephen, thanks for taking the time. Keep up the great work. Best of luck with your coverage of the tournament, and maybe we'll talk again soon if Texas is making a run to the Final Four. Thanks again.
Thanks a bunch, Ricky.
Special thanks to Stephen from the Daily Texan for hopping on the show. I want to remind you, of course, that we have a full press coverage live radio lineup every day, every weekday on the network. We have FPC Radio Live, Ian Glendon and Mike Debate. Do a great job getting you set for the day's news and reacting to the day before's news. Snowman in the Morning with Brian Snow. College Credit Hour with Memphis Spence. And Dylan and Ross Save Sports. Yes, that's the name of the show. And they do a good job at saving sports. So those are the four shows we have. We have FPC, NFL, which is on our Sportscaster page, sportscaster.com/fullpresscoverage. We have a couple podcasts of that. So be sure to check out some of the live product in addition to our podcast that we have here at Full Press Coverage. Moving over, we're going to go to the South region. Baylor's the one seed here. We're not talking about Baylor, though. We will later. Not an interview. But we'll get into it. One of the teams I was very interested in learning a little bit more about when I went about the process of coming up with what teams do I want you, the listener, to learn more about and what teams I want to learn more about was Arkansas. Went 22-6 on the season, 13-4 in the league. They were dominant at the end of the season up until their semifinal loss in the SEC tournament to LSU. And I'm a big fan of Eric Musselman. He does a really good job at Arkansas. He's got a lot of energy, if you remember from that Sweet 16 run he made with Nevada. Players love playing for him. There's a really talented group. And I was listening to Sean Farnham on Get Up on Wednesday, and he had Moses Moody, their top player, 17.4 points per game, shooting about 38% from three, as a top five NBA prospect. So Arkansas is that team. They love to score. And you've seen Seth Davis say Arkansas Colgate could be first to 100 wins. I mean, that's the offense you might see in this game. They don't have a lot of size. We talked about a grad transfer in Justin Smith. So we're going to get into that as well. But it's been a different year in the SEC. Alabama, of course, has been the top team. Arkansas has been really good. You got some good teams with Tennessee and Florida and LSU, but Kentucky was bad. And I can understand nationally why that changes the perception of the SEC when Alabama's not very, when Kentucky's not very good, excuse me. And Arkansas doesn't have a great out-of-conference win. They did beat Oral Roberts, who's in the tournament, but besides that, nothing fantastic. I don't think they got to play in any like those Big 12. They did play in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. They lost to Oklahoma State, but only by 4 points. So this is a very good Arkansas group. Tough draw, especially if they get Pat. I mean, if Texas Tech were to beat Utah State, Texas Tech Arkansas could be a really intriguing second round game because again, it's defense versus offense. And Arkansas is one of those teams that averages 80 points per game. They're 82.4, just 12th in the country. And they're about a top 25 team in rebounding. So this is still a really good offensive unit. We're going to dive more into that offense. And to help me with that, I am pleased to be joined for the fourth of our six guests is Andrew Joseph. Andrew covers the Razorbacks for Arkansas, the Arkansas Traveler, which is the Razorbacks student newspaper. If we dive into Arkansas, the guard play, Musselman as a head coach. We look at the SEC and any possible matchups to watch in the South region. How far can Arkansas go? Andrew's going to tell us. Stay tuned for that. We'll be right back with that interview. The fourth of six student sports reporters top on the show. Just a few segments left here on the Bracket Palooza special. Strong number one. And to take a look at Arkansas's chances as well as evaluate their season, he is a sports reporter for the student newspaper at Arkansas, the Arkansas Traveler. Andrew Joseph is here. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Happy to have you on. So let's talk about this Arkansas team. I mean, everybody's going to look at the SEC, and the national storyline is Kentucky had a really bad season. But how would you evaluate Arkansas's year, finishing second in the regular season, getting to the SEC semifinal?
I would classify it as extra successful. I think they outplayed their expectations, and I think a team with this many, they had four incoming freshmen, and then they used three grad transfers in the rotation. I think a team that was basically all newcomers except for two people that stayed in the roster this year, played really well together. And I think Coach Musselman has them. I think they're gaining momentum at the right time, which is what you want to do when you're heading into March. And I think when you think of Arkansas, obviously you've got to watch out for Moses Moody. The number one player on the team is a go-to scorer. The number one recruit freshman is likely a one-and-done player, but he scores about 17 points a game, I think. And when he's hot, then Arkansas is really tough to stop.
So what do you like the most about this group? Like, if I had to ask you for a snapshot about what makes this team as strong as they have this season, what would that be?
I think that their biggest strength is probably that they're not overly reliant on one person. Moses Moody is the go-to scorer, but he does have off nights, and the team's still able to find a way to win. For example, in the SEC tournament, he scored 5 points, I think, against Missouri in the quarterfinal, and the team was still able to find a way to win and beat Missouri to advance to the semifinals. But I think just throughout the season, they've been able to find different guys to pick up the slack, whether that's scoring, rebounding, defense, all that.
You look at Moses Moody's season, led the team in scoring 17.4 points per game. And I think one of the things that stood out, especially in the LSU game, I mean, they didn't get the win, unfortunately, for Arkansas, but 28 points, 9 rebounds. So he's starting to get hot the right time. And also you look at a game against Missouri where, like you said, they're not reliant on one player because he only had 5 points and they still found a way to win that game. Is that a strength for Arkansas going into this tournament that, all right, somebody can have a rough night like a Moody or a Justin Smith or somebody like that, and they can still – somebody else can pick up the slack for them?
Absolutely. I think it's very comforting for Arkansas fans to know that even if, you know, one guy is having an off day, they've got 4 or 5 guys that can score the ball at a high rate, and I think they just work – it's a very cohesive unit and very interchangeable parts. If one gets into foul trouble like Jalen Tate – does quite often, he'll sit and he'll have Devo Davis will come in and run the point as a freshman, and it's just kind of they interchange without missing a beat.
So you look at this Razorback team, and I'm looking at their rebounding, and that's another big thing to look at in the tournament, and their lead rebounder only has about seven boards per game. Mm-hmm. But Justin Smith has improved, it seems like, over 4 seasons at Arkansas. Can you talk a little bit about Smith and – is Arkansas's lack of rebounding a concern for you going into this tournament?
So Justin Smith is the grad transfer from Indiana, so he's in his first or only year at Arkansas, and he mm-hmm. has been probably the best rebounder best offensive rebounder on the team. But they also have 7'3" Connor Vanover, who starts the games and does the tip off. And then typically plays around to about 5 minutes and then sits for like the rest of the first half, comes out and plays a little bit more in the second half. So his minutes are a bit limited, but he is a threat to rebound the ball if the right matchup is there, because he is a liability defensively at 7'3". He's not very mobile. But I will say they've played the last 2, maybe 3 games, I think, without Jalen Williams, their 6'10" freshman center. And he is probably the most fundamental rebounder on the team. He was sat out the previous games because of COVID protocols, but he is back. So that'll be a nice addition to the team, and I think that'll definitely help improve the rebounding rate.
So it's Eric Musselman, of course, the coach at Arkansas ever since coming over from Nevada. A lot of people liked that hire at the time. What is it like covering him as a coach, and what do you make of the impact he's had on this group?
Oh, it's phenomenal. I think his attention to detail is something I've never seen before in a coach. I think it's almost like I learn something new about basketball every time he holds a press conference. And just the way he motivates his guys, he'll do little unique props and have pregame speeches with different things involved. And I think just the way he builds his team through grad transfers and freshmen is a unique way of building a roster. And I think he's proven that it works and that he can be successful doing it.
So Arkansas, the 3 seed in the South, they play on a 12:45 p.m. Eastern on Friday on True TV against the 14-seed Patriot League champion Colgate. Arkansas, as of right now, favored by about 8.5. I mean, look at this matchup, Andrew, and one of those teams I was interested in seeing on the bracket was Colgate, because they're 14-1, albeit all they play is Patriot League teams. But we've heard people talk about how this could be an offensive kind of ball game. What do you expect, and are you a little worried that Colgate could pull the upset here?
Yeah, so when this matchup first got announced, I was not familiar at all with Colgate as a program, honestly. And so when I looked up the record and saw they had lost 1 game all year, I did get a little concerned. And I did some digging, and I saw that they only played a conference-only schedule, which is not – a slight by any means. I mean, 14-1 is 14-1 no matter who you play. And I saw that they had the number 1 3-point defense in the nation, which I think could be a very big deal when they come up against an Arkansas team that struggles to score the ball from three other than Moses Moody. And so I think if they continue to defend the three as well as they have in their conference play, then Arkansas may – an upset may be on the cards, but I still like the Razorbacks in this one.
So you would think if Arkansas is going to have an early exit in this tournament or eventually exits this tournament, it's going to be because of their lack of three-point shooting?
Yes. I think two things that concern me with Arkansas is their lack of elite three-point shooting. They have guys that shoot – they have about three or four guys that shoot around 33-32%, and then Moses Moody is the only one that shoots above 35%, and he's sitting at 37.9%. So I think those numbers concern me a little bit. And then also I think they have a tendency to get a little careless with the ball, especially of late. They had big turnover games in the SEC tournament. And I just think a team with so many freshmen that play heavy minutes in the rotation, and then a lot of guys their first time in the March Madness tournament, it might be something where you see guys get a little unraveled and a little loose with the ball.
So when we look a little closer at this Arkansas team, give me an X factor, guy that you think doesn't get a lot of attention, but you think could play a big factor over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys on the Arkansas team that you just aren't always – they don't show out every game, but every game there's someone different. And so I think a guy that most people on a national scale haven't paid much attention to is the freshman guard Devontae Davis, which is through no fault of their own because he didn't play much in the non-conference schedule at all. And then he picked up more minutes as the season went along, and now he's sitting at about 20 minutes per game. And he runs the point as a freshman. He doesn't shoot a lot of threes, if any, but he has a high tendency to pull up in the mid-range, the left-handed jumper. And he's been really successful using that move, and he's very quick and can penetrate. And Musselman likes to give him the ball in go-to situations because he likes that he can beat his man off the bounce and then they can kick it out if need be, or he can make a play at the rim. And I think he's probably the hardest worker on the team. He's the point guard, but I mean, he rebounds the ball well, almost five rebounds a game in his limited minutes, and he can score, rebound, pass. I think if he has a good game by his standards, he is an X factor that can make a difference.
I talked earlier about the SEC and how Kentucky being down kind of hurt the perception of it nationally, but this is a conference that's still got six teams into the tournament. What did you make of the SEC as a whole this season, even though the usual superpower didn't have a great year?
Yeah, I would be honest. Kentucky was a little bit disappointing, especially the conference as a whole. But I think you still got some good teams. I think it's a good basketball conference, and I think that there are some teams in the SEC that are going to surprise people in the tournament. I think maybe obviously the Big 12 and Big 10 are the top two basketball schools right now, so they're getting a lot of love. But I think the SEC might surprise some people, and you could see Arkansas, LSU, Mizzou, and Florida winning multiple games in the SEC tournament for sure. Or the NCAA tournament, sorry.
Interesting you said Florida, potential second-round matchup with Ohio State. I mean, that could be a fun matchup. LSU could get a banged-up Michigan team. Out of those four, because let's say LSU, Tennessee, Florida, and Missouri, because we'll take Alabama out of this. Alabama should go on a deep run. Out of those four, which team do you think has the best chance to go on a run?
I like LSU, believe it or not. I know they have a matchup in the second round with the one seed, but I think they've got – three potential NBA players on that roster in Watford, Javonte Smart, and Cameron Thomas. And I think they're scoring. They can score with anyone in the league. It's just a matter of if they want to play defense. And if they pick up their defense in the tournament, they're going to be hard to stop.
So let's take a closer look at Arkansas's region in the South. You can't talk about Arkansas's game, but give me one game in the region you're looking forward to watching the most.
in South region, I am most looking forward to seeing the Villanova and Winthrop game, actually, just because Nova lost their senior point guard and Winthrop was absolutely dominant over their schedule over the course of the season, 23-1. And so I think you might have an upset brewing there.
The only thing that worries me about that game, and I can agree with you, I mean, looking at Villanova without Connor Gillespie, they're not the same, they're not the same basketball team. But I feel like whenever these 12-5s come out, I've seen a lot of them, whether it's UCSB over Creighton and Georgetown over Colorado, which I don't know if that's, I guess that would be an upset the way Georgetown's record is, but I feel like you always try to stay away from those, but I keep drawing myself into Winthrop just going, I don't know what Villanova is anymore because their last couple games they've not been the same team. But that game kind of worries me, but I'm still on the bandwagon there. If I had to go with another one, it'd probably be the 8-9 game, North Carolina-Wisconsin. You got two teams usually pretty good. Wisconsin out of the Big Ten, North Carolina gets in, but they played a little bit better as the season ended. So that's a plus for the Tar Heels after that Marquette loss. But I think that game interested him. And Arkansas's opponent in the second round, I think Andrew is interesting because Texas Tech is one of those teams that I like, then they struggle, then they play well again, then they struggle again. And Utah State, usually a pretty good mid-major of the Mountain West. I'm sure you'll be really into that game, but are you worried about any of those two teams, particularly if Texas Tech starts to get hot?
Yes, I do have my eye on that game as well. I think the problem with those schools is they're both excellent defensive squads. And so if they're able to match Arkansas on the offensive end, I'm not sure the Razorbacks will be able to keep up defensively. But I will say that Texas Tech and Utah State have struggled offensively this year. And so if it gets down to a fast-paced game with lots of scoring, I like the Razorbacks' chances in that one too.
So let's make some predictions. I'm sure you filled out a bracket. How far do you think Arkansas can go?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I've filled out multiple brackets as you do during this time of year. And, of course, you have to pick one where your school wins it all. So I've got Arkansas winning it all in one. But in my realistic one, I think they fall to Ohio State. So I think Ohio State and Baylor will play for a spot. Is that the end of the final or the Elite Eight?
Yes.
So that is my prediction for how far the Hogs make it.
So why would you have Arkansas losing to Ohio State? I think I see where you're going with it. I just want to see what do you think Arkansas can't stop about Ohio State?
Yeah, I just think Ohio State is one of those teams that their record would look a lot better had they not played in the most competitive conference this year. And I really don't think that Arkansas has a matchup or a defender to match up against EJ Liddell for the Buckeyes. I think he has a stretch five. They don't really have a forward that can guard the three or that can come out and guard the three. Otherwise, I think he presents a problem.
So my last question for you, Andrew, we've asked this to all the student reporters that have been on the show. What's it been like for you covering this team or any sport on campus in the midst of the crazy year such as this? What has the experience been like?
Yeah, it's I don't know that it's been different because this is the only year that I've done it, so I'm not sure what it's like in other years, but I assume that it's weird for people that have done this multiple years. But for me, it's been really enjoyable. I've learned a lot in the experience and just being able to, you know, go to games. And I will say when you are at the stadium and the stadium is at 20% capacity, it's not quite the same as when you go and, you know, see a sold out arena. But other than that, I mean, the quality of basketball is still there. The competitiveness is still there. And so all in all, I'd say, you know, it's been weird doing so much of it online and on Zoom, but it's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
So tell listeners out there how they can follow you on Twitter. I can follow the paper on Twitter, and anything you'd want to plug about the paper's coverage of the tournament.
Yeah, so I will be live tweeting and updating about the Hogs and their run in March Madness through my Twitter account, which is Andrew_Joseph23. If you want to follow me there. And then all the tweets that I send out will be tagged for the school newspaper, which is at UA Trav Sports, which is the Arkansas Traveler Sports Twitter account. And we will be having comprehensive coverage of the tournament. Looking forward to that. And we also, you can go to uatravsports.com and you'll find the Traveler Sports website. And you can find all different articles and tidbits about the Razorbacks if you are interested.
So be sure to go to the Arkansas Traveler website, check out the Razorbacks run here in Indianapolis, Indiana in March. Andrew, again, thanks for hopping on the show. Keep up the great work. Best of luck with the coverage, and maybe we'll talk again soon. Thanks for the time.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Won the Big Ten tournament, finished second by a half game over Michigan. Michigan played fewer games due to COVID protocols, but that was determined that winning percentage would decide the league. Michigan did win, although Illinois went into Michigan late in the year and blew them out. The Illini have been one of the more hotter teams coming in. They've won their last 7 in a row. They've won 10 of their last 11, actually. So this is a really good group. Brad Underwood doing his best coaching job. They've got Ayo Dosunmu, a guard who's got that cool face covering. I think for an injury he had earlier in the year, so he still has that, which I enjoy it. Hopefully it helps him avoid injury. And you've got Kofi Coburn in the paint, shooting about over 65%, averaging about 18 points per game. This is a really good group. And he averages close to 10 boards, so he's a double-double machine at night. Outside of those two, if you're looking at this from a casual fan perspective, you don't know a lot about Illinois after those two guys. But there's a reason that outside of Gonzaga, they're probably the second most popular pick to cut down the nets and win the national championship. The question for Illinois is playing in the Big Ten help them or hurt them? And what pitfalls for Illinois could be in their bracket, including a really fun Sweet 16 game, potentially, that we're going to dive into with our final guest a little bit later. But coming up next will be my conversation with Brandon Simberg. Brandon covers the Illini as the beat writer for the Daily Illini, which is Illinois' student newspaper. You can also find his work on busting brackets, talking about the NBA draft. So I really appreciated Brandon's knowledge. He dove into a lot of different topics on a lot of different teams, and he did some great things with that. So stay tuned for my conversation with Brandon, and then we will have our final student sports reporter segment. Then you get my picks, which is what I'm sure you've been waiting for and not been waiting for, depending on how you want to use them. But stay tuned for my conversation with Brandon and about the Illinois Fighting Illini. Here on the Kicking with Keyword Bracket Palooza special, and joining us now on the show, we go to the Midwest region, to the number one seed, the most would argue the second best team in the country. We're talking about the Illinois Fighting Illini, and to help us talk about them, the Big Ten, and their chances at a national championship, we're joined by the men's basketball beat writer for the Daily Illini, which is Illinois' student newspaper. Brandon Simberg is here. Brandon, how are you today?
Ricky, I'm doing well, man. Yeah, I'm super excited. We've got the tournament coming up, and after losing it last year, I can't wait just to watch every game on Friday. It feels like I'm super excited.
Especially the 1:15 p.m. Eastern game against Drexel. We know that Brandon will be completely locked in on and following that game. But let's talk big picture on Illinois, and then we'll get into some of the smaller pieces. Just your overall impressions of this season. You've been around this team, probably the most dominant it's been since Darren Williams and Luther Head were there in 2005. I can remember that at least a little bit. Your overall impression and what stood out to you the most about how dominant this team has been?
Yeah, you know, there was a point in the middle of the season, they just dropped back-to-back home games to Maryland and Ohio State. So we're talking mid-January. And I really thought, like, this team didn't have it in them. I wasn't sure that they were going to be able to live up to the expectations. You know, I thought I trusted Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn, but I wasn't sure where the other scoring would come from. But since that loss, they've been on a tear. They've they think they've won 14 of 15, only losing one game. They've been super dominant since mid-January. And, you know, it starts with Io and Kofi. That's Io's an All-American. He's one of the best guards in the country. I think Kofi Coburn has really taken a large leap forward as well, and he's just so big and strong. There's few guys that can stop him. But then you look at the role players who have stepped up in the past 2 months, and I think that's where the extra boost and spark comes from. Senior Trent Frazier has elevated his game incrementally. You know, freshman guard Andre Curbelo hit a midseason slump, but he's really electric off the bench and gives this team a spark. And you have, you know, senior forward Damonte Williams is just a great glue guy and hits open shots. And Jacob Grandison can provide some spark at the four as well. So I think it's the culmination of all these role guys kind of finding their spot and getting better as the season progressed is kind of what made Illinois special towards the end of the year.
Let's talk about a couple of those players. Ayo Dosunmu, you mentioned, averaging almost 21 points per game. Probably has the face shield held or the face guard held, heard around the world. I love when he wears that. It looks really cool. Tell me what has stood out about his game, jumping his points per game up about 5 from last season, free throw percentage up, assists are up, rebounds are up. Has he turned into that complete player in the third year that Illinois has been looking for?
100%. You know, coming back to school for his junior year, the feedback on him was he needs to shoot the three better and he needs to create better for his teammates. And the shooting has gone up. He's shooting 38% from three, which is up from 29% last year. So, you know, this is a guy that has now taken that complete offensive game, but his passing has really impressed me as well. He's making reads and decisions that I didn't think he was capable of making last year. And this enables his teammates to be better. He was top 2 in the assist in the Big Ten in assist with 5.3 per game. So that shooting improvement and that passing improvement are what's taken him from an all-league player to an all-American player.
Looking at Kofi Coburn, the one thing that stands out about him, and I know, Brandon, you've probably touched on this as well, I'm looking at his game logs from this past season. It's rare, and you know in the tournament everything gets called very strict. He hasn't fouled out once this season, which as a big man and how dominant he is, I'm shocked by that.
Yeah, and that's what enables Illinois to be as good as they are, because if he goes to the bench, you know, their backup center, Georgie Bashanasvili, is fine, but Kofi's kind of part of what makes them special. So his ability just to, you know, he doesn't jump for a lot of shots because he doesn't need to. He's 7 feet, 285 pounds. You know, if you're that big and that long, you can just kind of put your hands up and wall guys up and be able to contest shots without fouling. So, you know, we'll see. I think there's some bigs in this tournament that could maybe get him into some trouble. But I think, again, Kofi is just so big and strong that he doesn't need to jump or reach to defend. He can just kind of stay straight up. And him being in the game allows Illinois to be at their best.
You can talk about some of the under-the-radar role players that you mentioned, and Trent Frazier would be one, senior on this team. What kind of spark do you think that Frazier can provide? And is he one of those players that maybe if Dosunmu has a rough night that he can maybe carry the team if, let's say, Illinois, well, we think they'll get there, let's say gets into the regionals and their stars have a rough night?
Yeah, so I think Frazier's biggest what he does best for this team is actually his on-ball defense. He's Illinois' best perimeter on-ball defender. You know, if there's a guard around his size, 6 foot to 6'3", that needs to be stopped, Frazier has taken on that identity and that responsibility, and he made Big Ten all-defense team. Offensively, he's just kind of a spot-up shooter, I'd say, and he's darn good at it. Like, if he's open, I think that scares the other team. But I think the guy that if Dosunmu had an off night or 2 fouls that would lead the offense, it's Andre Curbelo. In Dosunmu's 3-game absence at the end of the Big Ten regular season, Curbelo was in double figures every game. He is a passing machine. You know, he's gotten close to triple doubles this season. He's had plenty of games with over 5 or 6 assists. When Dosunmu goes to the bench, it's actually Curbelo who they kind of lean on to be the primary creator.
That would make sense. But Frazier, you would think, could have a big role. And you look at the guards in Illinois' region, potentially maybe Alvarado in round 2. Cunningham will be the big one if Oklahoma State and Illinois play. You look at a possible regional final as well for Illinois, maybe playing a team like a West Virginia or a Houston. It's Frazier, you would think the role would be defensively. He's got to contain those guys. And could he be that one defensive plug, spark plug that changes the game?
Absolutely. Like you said, there's some really good small guards in this region, like Jose Alvarado, like Miles McBride, like the collection of Houston guys, Sastre and Giroux. So like they're gonna need Trent Frazier to make shots, but if they get and if they play hypothetically Georgia Tech or West Virginia or Houston, it's gonna be Frazier that guards those lead guards, and he's gonna need to slow them down.
Let's talk about Illinois' coaching for a little bit. Brad Underwood, probably having one of his best seasons as head coach. What is it like to cover him on a daily basis, and what has stood out to you the most about the way he's coached the squad in a crazy season?
Yeah, so I think in terms of X's and O's, the biggest thing he did was after that two-game losing streak that I mentioned earlier, he actually subbed Jacob Grandison into the starting lineup and moved Demonte Williams to the bench to kind of give them more size in the front court, but also more offensive versatility. And that definitely sparked a win streak. He's also not a guy that is committed to his rotations. You know, if freshman guard Adam Miller is shooting the ball well, then Adam Miller will get more looks and more runs and more opportunities down the stretch. But if Miller's having an off night and it's Curbelo who's kind of making – who's the spark that night, he'll play Curbelo. So Underwood isn't afraid to mix and match lineups depending on what he sees fit. And I just think as a leader, he's done a really good job with this group this year. You know, he's kept them even keeled after wins and losses. He never gets two up or two down, but he's still done a really good job motivating his guys. And his team is playing way better than they were in mid-January, which I think is the sign of a good coach. So that tells me he's doing a pretty good job.
So let's have you play scouting report for a second. If Illinois is going to have an early exit in this tournament, how are they going to get beat?
So the teams that have somewhat slowed Ayo Dosunmu down have a lot of length on the perimeter. Like I think about a Maryland team that kind of has guys like Keem Hart, Aaron Wiggins, Daryl Morcel that are maybe a bunch of 6'5 to 6'7 guys that can use their – because Illinois is small in the backcourt. You know, Frazier is 6'1, 6'2, Miller is 6'3, Dosunmu 6'4, 6'5, Curbelo is like 6'1, 6'. So if you – and they'll play three of those guys at a time. So if you have lots of lengthy perimeter defenders, that can help slow teams down. And then slowing down Kofi Coburn is tough. And if he touches the ball inside, you're probably dead. But I think the teams that have eliminated his touches and have done a good job fronting him and sending back weak side help to kind of deny his touches, those are kind of the two ways that you can beat Illinois, by shutting down Dosunmu and the perimeter players with length and just limiting Coburn's touches.
So if we look at this Midwest region, then give me a team that you, if it's not Illinois that comes out of this region, who do you think it is?
Oh, it's Oklahoma State. You know, I thought they were criminally misseeded as a four seed. They beat the three seed in their region, West Virginia, twice in the past 2 weeks. They've won 8 of 10. They just beat Baylor. And, you know, Io is maybe the best college basketball player in the region, but Cade Cunningham is the best basketball player in the region. That guy's incredible. And I think March is built for guys like Cunningham who can hit big shots, make their teammates better, have big moments. You know, Cunningham's been a winner at every level, and he's taken this Oklahoma State team to another level. So for me, it would be the Cowboys in the Sweet 16 that scare me the most. I think that team's playing really well at the right time, just like Illinois.
That would be an intriguing game that I know. I guarantee if that would have happened, let's say, next weekend, you and a bunch of the national media and local media would bring up the Brett Underwood used to coach at Oklahoma State angle, yeah, and how awkward that would be for him. But I think that's the matchup we're all looking forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kate and Io are two of the best perimeter players in the country, maybe the two best. You can certainly make a case for it. And so to see those two kind of big guards that have had big moments this season go up against each other in March would be electric. I'm bummed it's not in the Elite Eight or the Final Four, because I think the Sweet 16 is way too early for that matchup.
What is the buzz on a potential Illinois? Like, I think Illinois would have a tougher time with Georgia Tech than Loyola, even though Loyola is on having one of those great runs the last couple of seasons. But what's the buzz around a potential Illinois-Loyola-Chicago matchup locally if that were to happen?
We tried to ask about it post-game of the Big Ten tournament, and they weren't really willing to talk about it. But I do think it would be a big deal. You know, Loyola's been to a Final Four and a second round of the tournament more recently than Illinois has. And they're not really competing for recruits, but it's still like anytime you play an in-state battle, you know, it can get weird, it can get wonky. Throwing the fact that it's a tournament And I do think Porter Moser is a really good coach, and that's the number one team defensively on KenPom. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a matchup Illinois was dying for, even though I think they're the better team on paper. You throw in the in-state rivalry and two really good coaches, and I think it could be a kind of a weird game.
All right, so before we look at the rest of the region, let's look at the conference. I asked this to our Texas writer earlier in the show. Is the Big Ten, you think it helps itself or hurts itself that it was that competitive? Is it going to have an adverse effect in March, or you think the will be better enough that they were tested every day and you'll see more Big Ten teams as we get further in the tournament?
I think it'll help in the sense that the committee really respected the Big Ten this year. And so a lot of these teams ended up with really, really good seeds. You have Illinois and Michigan on the one line, Iowa and Ohio State on the two line, Purdue on the four line. So in theory, those teams are going to be favored for the first two games. So I think that'll help them. But I do think, you know, you look at a team like Maryland who was kind of up and down. They lost games to Penn State and Northwestern down the stretch. But this is a team that has some really good wins, like Illinois. You know, they finished middle of the Big Ten, but they've shown at times that they're capable of beating a really good team. So when faced with a team like UConn, who I do think is good, and I think James Bouknight is a star, I don't think Maryland's necessarily going to be scared of James Bouknight, because in their eyes, they're like, oh, we've beaten Io DeSumo, you know? So I don't think – and Rutgers, same for them. Like, they've beaten Illinois. They feel like they can beat Clemson. I think it'll give these teams confidence, and I think playing a tougher schedule will help them.
Yeah, I think Rutgers actually favored in that game, which I'm not surprised by. I'm just not that impressed by Clemson. I don't know. Like, I was surprised they were a 7 seed, albeit in the tournament. But I like the Maryland-Connecticut matchup. That game is going to be so much fun between Bouknight and Wiggins, and that backcourt combo is going to be amazing to watch. Let's take a look at this region a little bit. We know you're going to be locked in, Brandon, to Illinois and Drexel, but let's look at one more first-round matchup in this Midwest region that you're intrigued by.
Yeah, I think Tennessee and Oregon State is an interesting one. Obviously, the 5-12, you know, people love to say that's a common upset. But you've got Oregon State, who's playing really well at the right time. They shot the lights out in the Pac-12 tournament and were able to win the tournament and get in with their backs against the wall. You look at Tennessee, you know, it's a preseason top 10 team. They have tons of talent with Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson and Eve Pons, but they just weren't super consistent all year. And, like, they showed signs of life beating Florida by double digits in the SEC tournament, and then they hung with Alabama. So, like, Tennessee on the right night can look really good, and I do think they can challenge Oklahoma State in round two if they get there. But they have to get there, and they have to string together some consistent wins. So I'm looking at that Tennessee-Oregon State team as, you know, can Tennessee turn around, or does Oregon State kind of stay hot?
Yeah, it's definitely a fun matchup, especially since as we record this, we don't know the status of Fulkerson for Tennessee. Who had a head injury and missed the Alabama game. I mean, that if he's out, I mean, that could make a big difference in this ball game. I'm very fearful of – I like Oklahoma State a lot, but I'm very fearful of Liberty.
Yep.
Considering they won 2 years ago, so I kind of, like, tend to worry about that. But I think outside of that, I love the 11-6 matchup in this region, Syracuse and San Diego State, because I think Syracuse, you always worry about as that lower seed because Boeheim loves to, like, motivate, but San Diego State – I think they got a lot of love nationally for this consistent success they have.
Yeah, that's absolutely a matchup I'm looking forward to. You know, I was bummed we didn't get to see Malachi Flynn in the tournament last year. That was one of my favorite college guards. But, yeah, this Syracuse team is interesting. I think on the right night, when they shoot the ball really well, they can look good and the zone can do some weird things. And they do have former Illini Alan Griffin, so I've been keeping tabs on him all year. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that Syracuse game.
So one of the things I've asked all of our student reporters, Brandon, on this show is about covering the team in the midst of a pandemic. Now, the Daily Illini, you cover the men's team. Is this your – how many years have you been covering it?
So I was actually at Maryland last year.
This is actually a good question then. What was the – how's covering this team compared to previous years? Obviously, you missed the pandemic. What has stood out to you, and what have you enjoyed the most? Or just talk about covering a – team as elite as this in the midst of a unprecedented year?
Yeah, I mean, a big similarity between Maryland last year and Illinois this year was that it's two programs that you think, you know, have the potential to be good and have years like this, but it was both kind of their one-off year where they were both amazing and in the Big Ten picture, in the national picture. And so I really think the fan base support on both sides, even at Illinois when it's in a pandemic, is incredible. You know, the people on Illinois Twitter have been super supportive and reading my articles and reaching out and interacting with me. And I think Illinois fan base is incredible. I mean, the big difference between this year and last year is the Zoom interviews and like the, you know, I think you can learn more about a player and a person when you're talking to them in person, and you would have more of a dialogue and a back and forth instead of just a one-off question into a camera. But I think that, Illinois this year, I really like the way they give us a ton of players to talk to before games, after games. And when you're winning, guys are upbeat and you can talk about fun things and write about fun things. And I really feel like the vibe of both this year's Illinois team and last year's Maryland team, maybe because they were both so good, is that guys seem genuinely happy. I'll give a shout out to Georgie Bashanisvili. That is the happiest man in any Zoom interview I've ever seen. He comes in every day with a bright attitude, smiling, loves to talk to the media, gives insightful answers. So he's been a truly special person to cover. But overall, it's been a really cool experience, even though we're on Zoom.
The last question for Brandon. Let me get your insight on another Big Ten team, because I've been very interested in this, Michigan, because Illinois went to Ann Arbor, blew out Michigan. And now Michigan, for the foreseeable future, doesn't have Isaiah Livers. Do you believe Michigan can still make a deep run? How far do you think Michigan can go as long as Livers is out?
Yeah, so, you know, Illinois and Michigan, it's kind of a rivalry, and people on Illinois Twitter were getting mad at me for the fact that I really respected Michigan. I thought they were the best team in the Big Ten all year. They were the most consistent team. So I did really respect their team, but losing Livers is huge. You know, this isn't a team that has one star and then like Livers is a role guy. This is a Michigan team that it was all their individual pieces kind of working together to create the best product. And Livers, as their senior and a 40% three-point shooter, was a huge part of that. And I definitely think their draw is tough. You know, LSU is a pretty streaky hit or miss team. They can get hot. St. Bonaventure's playing well. They just won the A-10. I do think Michigan gets out of the first weekend and gets to the Sweet 16, but I really like both the 4 and 5 seed in their region. Florida State's a team that's been ranked in the top 10, top 15 all year. They have a lot of athletes, and people don't pay a ton of attention to Colorado, but that's a team with a formula to make a run. You have a senior veteran point guard in McKinley Wright, a team that doesn't turn the ball over. They're one of the best teams at shooting free throws in the country, and just collectively they seem to be playing pretty well going to the Pac-12 tournament championship. So I think Michigan's going to lose in the Sweet 16 to either Florida State or Colorado, but if they had Livers, I think it'd be hard to keep them out of the Final Four.
So that's the thing. I look at Michigan, and what stops me from picking them to lose early-ish, because I do think that Florida State-Michigan match, a lot of people are not talking about this angle, they just played each other 2 years ago. Albeit 2 or 3 years ago, albeit maybe different players, but, and obviously a different coach for Michigan now, but you gotta think Leonard Hamilton's gotten that in the back of his mind a little bit. But what stops me from picking Michigan to lose early-ish, like in the first weekend, they almost beat Ohio State without Livers, and Ohio State's really good. If they had just had a better play at the end of that game, they're probably playing Illinois in the Big Ten championship. And they just got too much depth with Juwan Howard. But you can realistically make a case for 3 Big Ten teams, and you could make a case for actually for the whole Final Four to be Big Ten if you believe Iowa can beat Gonzaga.
Yeah, I like you said, you know, Michigan's defense is really solid. They're a really solid unit. They still have Mike Smith. They still have Franz Wagner. So they still have Hunter Dickinson. Like, I do think their floor is pretty high that helps them not get upset. Iowa's bracket's interesting to me, and their draw is interesting to me because I respect the Pac-12, and I think Oregon's a team as a 7 seed that's pretty scary. And, you know, had they had Will Richardson all year, they probably wouldn't be a 7 seed. And then you look at USC, and there was one guy in the country I wanted to guard Luka Garza, it would be Evan Mobley. So I'm curious to see if USC gets there and if Iowa gets there and what that matchup would look like. As of right now, I actually don't have a Big Ten team in my Final Four, crazy enough. So
really?
I'm going against the grain here. I'm picking Oklahoma State over Illinois. I have too much respect for Cade Cunningham. But I do think if Illinois wins that game, they'll get there. But other than that, man, I like a lot of these other teams.
You would think Illinois, Oklahoma State, like you said earlier, kind of should be a regional final. It's kind of unfair to Oklahoma State that it's a regional semifinal. All right, so since you swore that you don't have a Big Ten team in your Final Four, I kind of want your Final Four now.
Yeah, I mean, Gonzaga, Baylor is pretty easy to me. I thought those have been the two best teams all year, and nothing has really changed for me, even though Baylor lost some games. I also don't think either their paths are too difficult. I think the bottom of Baylor's region with Arkansas, Ohio State, Texas Tech, even I respect Florida a bit. I don't really know who's going to come out of that, so I'm definitely taking Baylor. And then we talked about, you know, Michigan not being at full strength. I think they could beat a Florida State or Colorado. I'm not picking it. But then I think Alabama at the bottom of the region is a really good team. They, since they started the year 4-3, they've been on a roll. They're number two in KenPom defensively. They have a bunch of different shooters and guys that can create. So I like Alabama. And like I said, in the Midwest region, it comes down to Illinois versus Oklahoma State. I'm torn, but I'm leaning Oklahoma State right now.
All right, so last one for you, Brandon. I'm going to have you try to convince me otherwise here. Why should I not pick Ohio State over Baylor since you watch Ohio State more than I have? Is there something I'm missing here?
Yeah, I think that Ohio State, they're good, and they're a good – like Michigan, they're a good sum of their pieces, but this isn't a typical Chris Holtmann team that kind of grinds you out. They're 79th defensively in KenPom, and since 2013 – a team has not made the Final Four with a defense outside of KenPom. And Ohio State doesn't have a star, and that's not a bad thing. EJ Liddell and Dwayne Washington are really good players, but Washington's a little up and down, and I foresee him having just one of those nights where he's 3-for-10 or 3-for-11 and he can't get anything going and Liddell can't find his rhythm from three and they get knocked out. You know, I think their path is tough. I think Trey Mann on Florida could be like a Kemba Walker candidate and take them down. Arkansas and Texas Tech are both really good teams, and I have a lot of respect for Baylor, and I just don't know in a head-to-head matchup how Ohio State could take them down with Baylor's guards and with Baylor's athletic bigs. So that's kind of my anti-Ohio State case. I think I have them in the Elite Eight right now anyway, but I just don't think they can get past Baylor.
Okay. Fair enough. I definitely will take your insight on that. So, Brandon, to the listeners out there that can follow you on Twitter, that can follow the Daily Illini Twitter, and feel free to plug any coverage you got coming up for the tournament.
Yeah, I'm writing a story a day this week for our newspaper, just grinding out coverage. Wrote about how Brad Underwood turned around the program today and what it took. And then, yeah, I'll be in Indianapolis or wherever Illinois plays for the tournament this weekend. So you can follow me there for updates on all things Illinois.
And how can they follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can follow me at Brandon Simberg. My first name, Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N. Last name Simberg, S-I-M-B-E-R-G. And don't be afraid to reach out or message me, DM me, hit me up on Twitter. I love to interact with people. Love to talk basketball. So, yeah.
Be sure to follow Brandon's work. Knows his stuff inside and out. And if Illinois makes a deep run, I think he's going to be one of those people on Twitter that you want to keep following. Or if Illinois somehow loses to Drexel, you're definitely going to want to follow him. yeah. Brandon, again, thanks for hopping on the show. Keep up the great work. Best of luck in Indy. And hopefully we'll talk again. If Illinois makes a run to the Final Four, thanks for the time.
Yeah, for sure, Ricky. Thanks for having me.
Special thanks to Brandon from the Daily Illini for hopping on the show. So my last team to look at is I wanted to look at Oklahoma State. I know we had Zion Williamson a couple years ago in the tournament with R.J. Barrett, but it's lately number one picks don't make the tournament. We've seen Anthony Edwards with Georgia, Ben Simmons with LSU, Markelle Fultz with Washington. So it's kind of cool when you get a guy who's a projected number one pick like Cade Cunningham that makes the NCAA tournament. I've been watching a little more Oklahoma State as the season went on because I watched Cunningham earlier in the year, and I liked him. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, he's the consensus number one pick, but he's starting to play a lot better, and he got more consistent as the season went along, shooting over 40% from three on the year. averaging 20 points per game. Does turn the ball over a little bit, but shot the ball 45% from the floor, which isn't bad for a guard. But you look at Mike Boynton's team, and it's not just about Cunningham. You got Avery Anderson, Isaac Lekelly. I'm sure I got that last name wrong, but I gave it my best. And Lekelly's a lead rebounder. So Oklahoma State, they don't have that much size, but if you're looking for a trendy pick to make the Final Four that's not a top two seed, you might want to look at Oklahoma State and a potential Sweet 16 match with Illinois, and the storylines for that would be insane because you'd have Tesumu and Cunningham, two of the best guards in all of college basketball, and Brett Underwood, who is the Illinois coach, used to coach at Oklahoma State. So the narratives for that game, which would be next weekend, remember, first-round games are Friday, Saturday this week, and then Sunday, Monday are the second-round games, and then the weekend after the regional Sweet 16 Elite Eight games. So it's not your typical Thursday is the first four, but you're not getting, like, 12 games on Thursday. So I wanted to learn more about Oklahoma State, who made a run toward the end of the season. They weren't in danger of missing the tournament. They were on that, like, 8-9 seed line, but then they beat Baylor in the Big 12 tournament. They beat West Virginia twice. They beat Oklahoma twice. They beat Texas Tech in overtime. And again, lost by 5 to Texas in the Big 12 championship game, who they beat in double overtime the month prior. So Oklahoma State is a real intriguing team. Again, they beat Arkansas earlier in the season in the non-conference, beat Wichita State. So I want to learn more about Cade Cunningham and this Cowboys team. So my final guest for this segment is Chris Becker. He writes for the Ocali student newspaper, which is the paper for Oklahoma State. We talk more about Boynton as a coach. We talk more about Cunningham, the other cast of characters that played with Cade Cunningham, and what are Oklahoma State chances if there is a Sweet 16 matchup with Illinois. So stay tuned for that here on the Kickin' with Keeler Bracket Palooza special, our last of six conversations with student sports reporters, and then my picks for the Final Four and the National Championship here on Kickin' with Keeler. One more segment, my conversation with Chris is coming up right after this. To go on the Kickin' with Keeler NCAA Tournament Bracket Palooza special, we keep it here in the Midwest region with arguably the most intriguing player in the NCAA Tournament. It's been a long time since the number one pick has been in the spotlight, and this time it's most likely this year in the NBA draft going to be Cade Cunningham, so we had to talk Oklahoma State. And to do that, we bring on one of the student reporters who covers the Oklahoma State basketball team for Ocali, which is the Oklahoma State student newspaper. Chris Becker is here. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm good, Ricky. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you. So let's get this Oklahoma State team. Before we dive into the specifics, talk to me about this season. What has stood out to you and the way the Cowboys are coming into this NCAA tournament outside of that Big 12 championship loss on a really high note, winning six of their last eight games coming in?
I think the best thing is, you know, watching some of these younger guys grow. You know, obviously Cade Cunningham's the storyline, and, you know, he's everything that everyone thought he would be. But, you know, watching some of the other guys grow, like Rondell Walker, Avery Anderson, Caleb Boone, and even the late emergence of Keelan Boone this season, you know, it's been really fun to watch. And I think that's kind of what helped Oklahoma State get this together at the end and, you know, played nine games in the span of 2 weeks. So, you know, watching these guys grow and kind of help Cade along has been probably the biggest factor in this Oklahoma State win streak, except for the Texas loss and a couple losses here and there.
So looking at Cade Cunningham real quick, obviously having had a fantastic season, 20 points per game, 6.3 boards, about 3.5 assists. Did he over exceed your expectations for this year? And what did you like most about watching him play?
I wouldn't say over exceeded. I think he hit the expectations right on the head. He came in with a lot of hype, and, you know, that could be really hard on somebody who's, you know, 18, 19 years old. And he played really well. You know, he's had some games where, you know, he's kind of struggled a little bit with, you know, turnovers and some stuff of that aspect. But, you know, Cade's been really good, and he won Big 12 Player of the Year, you know, for a reason, and rightfully so, I think. And he's just so fun to watch. You know, he's not flashy like some of these other guys, like Zion was in college, or, you know, some of these other guys who, you know, could go up in the top five in this NBA draft. But he is undoubtedly a superstar in the making and has so much raw talent and just talent in general, whether it's scoring the ball, you know, facilitating, you know, ball movement, or, you know, even helping others score. And I think that's what makes him the biggest, like the best player in this draft is not necessarily his scoring ability, but his ability to help others grow and kind of, you know, have their games progress with him.
And I think the one thing that most people that follow the sport, but if you're a casual fan just getting into the tournament, this isn't just Cade Cunningham. And you look at the guards, Lekele, you could probably correct that for me a little bit, and Avery Anderson. Avery Anderson's made some big plays down the stretch, especially in that West Virginia game. Talk to me about the way those two guards have kind of maybe been in the background in a lot of people's eyes, but have made some big plays for this Cowboys team.
Yeah, you know, Avery Anderson has been really good down the stretch. You know, OSU was without Cade Cunningham for that game against West Virginia to close out their regular season, and Avery Anderson scored 31 points, and OSU won that game. That's pretty big underdogs without their star player, and Isaac Likely was also out for that game. So you're without your junior point guard in Likely and your star freshman in Cade Cunningham, and you're still able to win a game on the heels of Avery Anderson going for 31. He scored more than 15 points seven times this season, and so he's been really, really good and was a huge piece to this defense and this offense and defense too. But he's so quick, and his quickness can really take over a game at times. And Isaac Likely, he's definitely not the year that people would have wanted him to have. Dealt with some injuries, hand injury and then a foot injury there before that. And so his end of the season has been kind of shortened due to some of those injuries. But he, when he's on the court, he is the normal Isaac Likely that everyone wants to have on OSU. And he doesn't score a lot of points, which, you know, everyone can see. But he's just like Cade Cunningham. He can facilitate better than anybody else. And he's a big presence down low, even as a point guard. You know, at the beginning of the year, Coach Mike Morton talked about having Isaac and Cade go at it one-on-one at the five. And so when you have a point guard who can play at the five, that's a pretty big deal for some teams, especially a team like OSU who's pretty small.
You mentioned a little bit earlier Caleb Boone, the sophomore big man for Oklahoma State, that he's improved. What have you seen from him toward the end of the season that you think can carry over into this tournament?
Yeah, his post moves have been impeccable. His scoring has helped a lot, especially down low. He's on pace, I believe, still to break the Oklahoma State field goal percentage record in the season, which helps when, you know, most of your shots are dunks. But he is so good down low offensively. However, defensively, he can go one-on-one with some of the biggest big men in the Big 12. And the Big 12 has a lot of big, really good big men. And he's held his own throughout most of the season. Every so often, there's a big man who will get him. Like David McCormick got him in Lawrence this year. Jericho Sims in the Big 12 championship game. Mark Vidal kind of had a way with him a little bit. But, you know, he can hold his own. He's not the biggest big man in the world, but he can hold his own against some of these bigger guys. And with OSU's zone, it kind of helps him out a little bit where, you know, he'll have some help helping with these big guys. And I think what was most impressive to me this year about him was the way he was able to handle Brady Manek, because Brady Manek's not a normal big man either, but he was playing down low a lot of the time for OU, guarding Caleb Boone. And Caleb really had his way with Brady, and Brady Manek's a pretty respectable name in NCAA. And Caleb Boone kind of he held him in check there for most of the time, especially defensively.
Looking at Oklahoma State and its head coach, Mike Boynton, who is having his best season in the 4 years with the Cowboys, what do you like about covering him, and what impact have you seen him have on this team in this crazy type of season?
Yeah, I love covering Coach Boynton. He's not afraid to tell it like it is, and he's bluntly honest about a lot of things, and that's what I like about him the most is, you know, he's not afraid to tell you what's wrong with the team or even what's good about the team. Like he'll hit you straight, and he'll tell you exactly how things are and what he thinks the team play like. And he's pretty hard on the team. Not very often he'll say that, you know, he'll find some times that the team played really well, and he'll be like, no, there's still a lot of improvement to go, which is really good in the coach. And he's kind of got this culture back to what it needs to be. He's built a pretty good team. You know, he's recruited this is his fourth year, so this is his first year with only people that he recruited on the team. And this culture is exactly what he wanted to build at Oklahoma State, and I think it's a great culture to have. This team is one in a unit, and it's not just a one-man show like a lot of people would have thought with Cade Cunningham coming in. It's an 8-to-10-man show, and that's exactly what a team needs coming March.
So when we look first at Oklahoma State's first round game, which is Friday night, 6:25 p.m. Eastern on TBS. The game is at the Indiana Farmers Coliseum against the Atlantic Sun champion Liberty Flames. And that name is familiar. Liberty, of course, pulled an upset a couple years ago against Mississippi State. I know a lot of people, including myself, have a little bit of hesitancy. If they pick Oklahoma State deep, you're worried about this game. How worried should Cowboys fans be about Liberty, and can you see an upset here?
Yeah, I mean, Liberty's a good team, and it does worry me a little bit. But at the same time, it's going to be whoever can control the pace of play, because these two teams are polar opposites when it comes to pace of play. OSU, everyone knows they like to run the floor. They're fast. They're quick. They're their best when they're out in transition. Liberty, however, you know, they take a slower approach, a little slower pace of play. They don't turn the ball over a lot. You know, they're an experienced team, and everyone knows in March, experience wins. And that's the big thing that going against Oklahoma State here is their most experienced player is Isaac Likely, who's a junior. In terms of the team of OSU, obviously Taren Flavors, Bryce Williams are both graduate transfers, but you know, they haven't been to the dance either. So it's going to be a tough time, and it's going to be a tough game. And you know, if OSU doesn't come prepared for Liberty and they look too far ahead, then it'll be they might be in for a quick stay in Indianapolis.
You look at the 4-13 lines, and three of the four are 7 or 7.5 point favorites for the 4 seed. The only 4 seed with a higher than that, I believe, is Florida State. So it shows you those 4-13s should be pretty interesting come this tournament. So let's say look for Oklahoma State, Chris. Give me an X factor that somebody that doesn't really get a lot of attention you think could have an impact on during these next couple weeks.
Rondell Walker. His defensive ability is that of a, you know, the best way I can describe it is a cornerback in a defensive football team, or a cornerback in the Big 12 even. You know, I know multiple football players at OSU have tweeted at Rondell, you know, seeing if he wants to come play DB for them. So he can steal the ball. I mean, a lot of these, you know, like I said earlier, Liberty doesn't turn the ball over a lot, but they haven't played Rondell Walker yet or Bryce Williams. Bryce Williams. So those two guys can really, really force those turnovers. They can get steals, and they're the keys to OSU running a transition. And if Rondell plays his best, I think Liberty's offense will feel the brunt of that.
So is that a player that you think, when we kind of talk about, when we look at the potential guard play, and the team can't look ahead, but we can, a potential Cunningham, DeSumo, Sweet 16, is he the kind of player that can kind of take some of the defensive pressure away from Cunningham so he can focus more on the offensive side?
Yeah, for sure. OSU, when looking at the IO matchup in the Sweet 16, obviously a lot of the eyes go to that one, the possibility of a Brad Underwood OSU reunion there. And IO's a tough player to guard. Really no one this year has been able to, you know, shut him down or even slow him down for that matter. And OSU has four guards who can play in so impressive defense. And I think that'll help OSU, because you can rotate four guys onto him, and, you know, kind of keep switching up looks and stuff. And that's what makes OSU's defense so good, is they're really good at shifting looks, switching from man-to-man zone and then their 2-3 zone to their 1-3-1 zone, applying some pressure and stuff like that. You know, Bryce Williams is probably, in my eyes, would be the best defender on the OSU's team. Rondell's right there with him, though. But Bryce Williams was able to, I mean, probably one of the better point guards who's been having a better year, besides Jared Butler, obviously, is Austin Reeves at OU. And Bryce Williams, he gave Austin Reeves a long day in Stillwater when OU came up here. And Bryce Williams can go one-on-one with the best of them, and so can Rondell. So IO, you know, OSU can shut down – or not shut down. No one can shut down IO, but can definitely slow down IO with that. The big issue with Illinois is Kofi Cockburn, though.
So I'll ask this. I asked the Texas student reporter this question, so I'll ask you the same thing. Playing in the Big 12, will you think it'll have an adverse effect in this tournament, or will it benefit going through all those tough games night in and night out? Do you think it could wear out a team, or do you think that'll help a team?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it helps teams, especially in OSU shoes, that are very inexperienced, a lot of young guys, a lot of young talent, because they've been through the ringer. They've played these tough games. They've played so many tournament teams. OSU's played 13 different tournament teams, and then the Big 12 teams twice. So, you know, it's been a struggle to get through the Big 12 for any team. And, you know, that's the big thing about the Big 12. Everybody just beats everybody. And, but yeah, I think it can wear down a team because, and you saw that in the Big 12 tournament where OSU was just, you know, they were worn out for that championship game, you know, playing Baylor and West Virginia back-to-back days and then having to go play Texas. So it can definitely wear down a team, but I think it also helps teams like OSU who are really young, and it makes them learn on the fly and get that experience that's so important in March Madness.
So we look at the Big 12, and it's one of the deepest conferences outside of the Big 10 in college basketball. Oklahoma State has seen Baylor a couple times, actually beaten Baylor in the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament. So we can kind of dismiss Baylor for this, at least this part of the conversation. Which Big 12 team besides Oklahoma State and besides Baylor do you think can go on a deep run here?
I honestly think Texas could do it. You know, they have a pretty favorable matchup to get to the Sweet 16. You know, you got Abilene Christian first, and no disrespect to them. I think Texas will probably beat them pretty handily. And then you have to play BYU or the last four games of Michigan State, UCLA. And Texas is really hot right now, and they're playing some of their best basketball. Jericho Sims has really stepped up. Matt Coleman's playing he's been unstoppable in the Big 12 tournament and hopefully into March. But, you know, I think that Texas could make a deep, deep run in this tournament. Besides OSU, I think OSU could also do it with how hot they are too.
But I like Texas as well. I don't think they'll go on a deep run, but I think I said this to the Gonzaga student reporter we had on as well. The one team I think that could give Gonzaga a push outside of Iowa before the Final Four is Oklahoma, because the Sooners, to me, you saw them firsthand. I mean, in January they were beating every top team, and then they go on a lull, and then they get hot, and then they get on a lull. If the Oklahoma that from January shows up to that second round game, they could push Gonzaga to the brink. I wouldn't be shocked about that.
Yeah, I think they have to get through Missouri first, and that's going to be a difficult thing to do. You know, I've told everybody I've talked to, Missouri and OU are almost identical in the fact that these are both top 10 teams who have kind of had a fall from grace at some point this season and just, you know, got really, really hot and then fell off the planet. You know, OU has not had a great end of their season, and I think they might have peaked a little too early. And Brady Manning's kind of been struggling a little bit. Austin Reeves started to struggle. You know, I don't know. You'll have to be the OU team that came into the first Bedlam game and not the OU team that has lost, I think, six of the last seven or five of the last seven or something like that.
So taking the Oklahoma State Liberty game away for a second, give me another first round game in the Midwest region that you're looking forward to watching.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think Loyola Chicago Georgia Tech is going to be a good matchup. You know, Georgia Tech obviously really hot right now, very experienced. I think I saw that they were one of the most experienced teams in this tournament. Loyola Chicago, on the other hand, you know, they've been playing really well too, and they're a really good team, great coach, and he'll have his team ready. And you know, you got to pick Sister Jean. You know, you have to respect Sister Jean after that deep Final Four run they made a couple years ago. You know, I think that's going to be a good game to watch, and I think Georgia Tech. You know, I don't think they'll beat Illinois if they get past Loyola Chicago, but I think they could give Illinois a pretty big run for their money too. Jose Alvarado's a really good scorer, really good point guard. But also another matchup that kind of intrigues me that I've struggled to pick in my bracket, is Clemson Rutgers. That's a team. Those are two teams that kind of flew under the radar a little bit this year, and I think that'll be a good matchup too.
So should Oklahoma State fans be rooting for Tennessee or Oregon State in a potential second-round matchup? Because Tennessee, I'm interested in Fulkerson plays and how healthy he is. And then you have Oregon State, who wins the Pac-12 championship, gets on a roll, but can they keep it going? I think that's going to be really interesting to see which team holds serve here.
Right. You know, Tennessee's been pretty solid this year. They've been pretty consistent in the SEC, and you know, Fulkerson's a big factor. If he can play and be healthy, I think they can compete with anybody. But if, you know, you don't know how healthy he's going to be after, you know, the big elbow to the face. So, and Oregon State, they're hot too. But I looking at Oklahoma State, would like to play Oregon State just a little more than I would Tennessee. Because like you said, how long can they hold together that hot streak?
And you look at Tennessee, we also have the Rick Barnes returning to play Oklahoma State factor. So that would bring back some old Big 12 nostalgia, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but I'd also like the OSU-OSU matchup of Oregon State, you know, Oklahoma State. The
battle on that one. So if Oklahoma State goes out early, what do you think would be the main reason why?
It'd have to be turnovers. You know, they've struggled with turnovers all season. And if they don't limit turnovers, Liberty will make them pay. Because like I mentioned earlier, Liberty does not turn the ball over. And if OSU turns the ball over and gives up some fast break points to Liberty, it could be tough to recover. And I think OSU's going to have to come out of the gate and be very, very good and not turn the ball over at all.
So how far do you – if you've done a bracket, how far do you have Oklahoma State going?
Unbiasedly, I think the Sweet 16 is where it could end for Oklahoma State. Biasedly, the Final Four.
So somewhere in between those two.
Correct. Yeah, I think OSU can make a deep run if all goes right and they can stay hot.
So I know you mentioned that the Illinois game would be trouble. Would that just be because do they have the size or the front court depth to handle Coburn, or is it strictly that could be where things get a little dicey?
Yeah, I think guarding Kofi is going to be the biggest issue for the Illinois game. You know, I think, like I said earlier, you got four guards who can defend IO, but Caleb is not very big, and Kofi is very, very big.
All right, so let's wrap it up here, Chris, with this. I've asked all the student reporters this question. Covering the team this season, I don't know if you covered it past this before this season, but what has it been like to cover the team at your school amidst the pandemic? What will you remember from it?
I don't know. It's been fun, but it's definitely been different. You know, I haven't been able to talk to Kate Cunningham in person, which sucks, but it was fun. You know, it was different than than covering other events. You know, you had to wear your mask in the stadium. You know, we weren't on the floor, close to the floor. We were up in the rafters in the media section there. So it was definitely different and odd, but it was still fun, and it was awesome to watch these guys play, especially Kate Cunningham, which people don't get to very often.
So tell listeners out there how they can follow you on Twitter. I can follow the paper on Twitter, and any coverage you want to plug that the paper is doing for the tournament.
Yeah, so we got some big March Madness stories coming up. You can follow us at O'Cauley on Twitter or at O'Cauley Sports on Twitter. Myself personally is at @BHRIS_CECKER 316. But yeah, for all your Oklahoma State coverage, if you want the best coverage of Oklahoma State, it's the O'Cauley.
Be sure to check out the O'Cauley for all your Oklahoma State coverage, your Cade Cunningham coverage, anything you want to get Cowboys related for this tournament. That's where I think you should go, especially Cunningham's going to be the most intriguing player to watch in this tournament. So it should be must-watch TV. Chris, again, thanks for hopping on. Keep the great work. And maybe we'll talk again if Oklahoma State goes on a deep run. But enjoy the tournament. Thanks for hopping on.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Chris Becker from the O'Cauley student newspaper at Oklahoma State for hopping on the show. And I want to thank, once again, all six of our student sports reporters for hopping on the show. I love learning from the students because, again, they're the ones on campus, and it's been a strange year for them, I'm sure, trying to balance covering a team while also doing most of their schoolwork remotely. It's not easy. I mean, your college experience should be a lot different than it is now, but they've made the most of it, and they've done a great job of it. So, again, shout-out to, again, Vincent Saglin-Benny from the Gonzaga Bolton, Abby Schnabel from the Loyola Phoenix, Stephen Wagner from the Daily Texan, Andrew Joseph from the Arkansas Traveler, Brandon Simberg from the Daily Illini, and Chris Becker from the O'Cauley. So six great student reporters. Be sure to follow all of their work throughout this NCAA tournament. Who knows? Maybe you might see them again on the show as we get through the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four. Should be a lot of fun. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for, the picks. And I guarantee you're not going to like some of them. I don't feel bad for you in that regard. So we're going to go Sweet 16 to the championship. We'll start in the West. I've got Gonzaga, and I've got him taking on the 5-seed Creighton. Creighton beating Ohio. Again, I'm higher on Creighton than most, but I have Gonzaga beating Creighton getting to the Elite Eight anyway. So I think regardless of who you pick in that Creighton, UCSB, Virginia, Ohio portion of the bracket, regardless, you're probably not beating Gonzaga, so you can take chances there if you want. And I think taking Creighton's a chance. A lot of people are going to take the Gauchos. They're going to take Ohio. Go with Creighton or go with Virginia here. If you do, you might actually be better off and try to find a mid-major somewhere else or a lower seed somewhere else. I'm going to go with USC to upset Kansas. I love Evan Mobley in the paint. Trojans advance. And they play Iowa and Luka Garza and Wieskamp and Bohannon. I love the experience Iowa has, so they beat USC. Sets up a Gonzaga-Iowa Elite Eight, which we talked about earlier in the show. Gonzaga won by 11 on a neutral court, but that game a little bit this is a little bit different than what it was earlier in the year. Bohannon only had 2 points in that first matchup. I expect Iowa to play a lot better, but overall I think Gonzaga is just too talented. So I'm going to take the Gonzaga to come out of the West region and make the Final Four. I think Iowa, though, will keep it competitive. There's not many that can stop Luka Garza in the paint for the Hawkeyes. So give me Gonzaga as the first team in my Final Four. We'll go down to the East. I have Michigan getting past St. Bonaventure in the second round, and I have Florida State with Scotty Barnes getting past Georgetown, which sets up Florida State against Michigan. Now, this was a matchup from a few years ago out west that Michigan won. Or was it Michigan won or Florida State won? I'm going to look into that real quick for you guys. I don't want to give you wrong information on that. This was a matchup recently. Leonard Hamilton, I'm sure, remembers it. Michigan, of course, a different coach now. John Beilein was there at first. And now it's Juwan Howard. Michigan and Florida State played in 2018. Michigan was able to advance to the Final Four. I think it'll be different this time around. Now, the reason I can't pick Michigan is I don't know what Isaiah Livers' status is. If you told me Livers is healthy, I'd probably pick Michigan in this game. Now, again, they're more than just Livers. Hunter Dickinson's really good as their big man in the paint. Franz Wagner, who's the brother of Mo Wagner. Michigan has a lot of talent, but what Florida State always seems to bring is defense. And they can really shoot the ball from the perimeter with all five of their starters. I think that's a big factor here. I know Florida State turns the ball over a lot, but I'm going to take the Seminoles to upset Michigan. This will be my only one of two one seeds to not make the Elite Eight. Give me my other one a little bit later. But Florida State gets in for me. I like Texas to beat Michigan State or UCLA. And I like Alabama to beat Connecticut. It's close. I've gone back and forth on UConn and Maryland. I think if I did a second bracket, I'd probably pick the other one anyway. But I love the matchup. I'm going to go with Alabama over UConn, setting up Texas versus Alabama, and I'm going to pick Texas. I think Texas' guards have enough to get it done, which sets up a rare 4-3 matchup in the Elite Eight. And I'm going to go with Texas to beat Florida State and make the Final Four, which I believe would be their first Final Four since 2003. Remember, they didn't make the Final Four with Kevin Durant. I think they made the Final Four the year Melo won the championship. So I have Gonzaga playing Texas in one semifinal. In the South region, I have Baylor beating North Carolina. I have Winthrop upsetting Villanova and then upsetting Purdue. And again, I like Purdue. And I know people who know people that go to Purdue, they're going to be not happy about this. But I'm going to pick Winthrop. Again, you need one or two double-digit seeds to get to the Sweet 16. I'm going to go with Winthrop as one of them. But Baylor's going to beat Winthrop anyway. I've got Arkansas beating Utah State, and I've got Ohio State beating Florida. Baylor beats Winthrop. Ohio State beats Arkansas. And it sets up a matchup, and that's why I asked Chris Becker from Oklahoma State. I asked him, was I crazy? Well, no, not Chris. I asked Brandon Simberg. See, my conversation go crazy. I asked Brandon from the Daily Line, and I said, am I crazy picking Ohio State for Baylor? Because I've gone back and forth on this. And Ohio State, I love the team dynamic, Justice Suing, E.J. Liddell, Dwayne Washington. Baylor's got good guards. Masio Teague and Jared Butler, very good. They got Davion Mitchell. The Bears have played great all season long. And remember, Baylor was great last year. If that tournament did not get canceled because of COVID, Baylor could have been one of the teams that cut down the nets last year. So you know they've got that extra chip on their shoulder. I just like the way Ohio State plays. Got to a Big Ten championship game, beat Michigan after losing them a couple weeks ago, gave Illinois all they could handle in overtime, which was a really fantastic Big Ten championship game. And I find it really hard to think that not one Big Ten team is going to make the Final Four. It'd be a real disappointment if that happened. Maybe I have the wrong one, but I'm going to go to Ohio State. And in the Midwest region, I have Illinois beating Georgia Tech. Yes, I'm not picking Loyola, but I've gone back and forth on it. I picked Tennessee to beat Oregon State. I have them playing Oklahoma State with the Cowboys advancing there. I have Syracuse upsetting San Diego State and West Virginia. So my two double-digit seeds that make the Sweet 16 are Winthrop and Syracuse. Syracuse upsets West Virginia in a classic Big East battle. And I have Rutgers beating Clemson, but they lose to Houston. I've seen a lot of people pick Rutgers to go to the Sweet 16. I would not be shocked by it, but I'm going to give the Cougars some love here. One of the things you like about Houston is their defense. Remember, they didn't even finish first in the American, Wichita State did, but Houston holds opponents to 58 points per game. They're really good defensively. They've got good guard play with Quentin Grimes. I like this group. I think they beat Syracuse, gets the Elite Eight, and then the epic matchup, which, as I've said many times so far on this broadcast, Illinois-Oklahoma State should not be a Sweet 16 game. It should honestly be, at worst, an Elite Eight game. That's how good these two teams are. And I'm going to go with the star here. I'm going to go with Oklahoma State to upset Illinois and then beat Houston to make the Final Four. So here are my Final Four teams. I have a 1, a 2, a 3, and a 4. Hold on, 1? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. The odds of that happening are slim, but we go with it. Gonzaga will play Texas, and the Bulldogs will advance there. And Ohio State will play Oklahoma State in the Battle of States. But I'm going with Ohio State here, setting up a Gonzaga-Ohio State National Championship game. For Ohio State, it will be their second trip to the title game, first time since Greg Oden and Mike Conley. And I'm kind of going with the Ohio State love because they helped me have a really good bracket the last time I picked them this far. But I'm going with Gonzaga. To me, they're just too good. I know all you've tried to figure out, okay, it's as old as Gonzaga's as old to let you down in the bracket before. Believe me, I think about that when I do my bracket. I think about teams that have really messed up my bracket over the years, and I kind of hold a secret, vendetta against them a little bit, even though it's much different teams. For example, when I was thinking about Winthrop Villanova, I kept thinking about how many times, you would think Winthrop's the upset pick and they don't win. Can't think about that. You got to kind of try to put that in the back of your mind and just look at the matchups as a whole. But I'm going to go with Gonzaga because you got Suggs, you got Kispert, you got Timmy. This team is just really good inside and out. So give me Gonzaga to cut down the nets, finish off the undefeated season. Mark Few deserves it. And this is, I think, really just for the two decades that Gonzaga has been really strong against the top teams in the country. They play a tough non-conference every year, and they do well with it more often than not. They're prepared for this. They may have some tough games along the way. I think their toughest game is probably the Elite Eight against Iowa coming in. I think, again, the Oklahoma situation changes things a little bit. But the Bulldogs should be fine. So our next show coming up, right now we're going to probably try to do a show for you Sunday. Again, I mentioned it last week. We're going to do a general show there. We'll mix in some first-round reflections from the tournament. We'll mix in some NFL free agency. Of course, I got to talk about the Patriots making all those moves. You know you'll get my thoughts there. And maybe a little baseball, about a week and a half away from opening day. And we'll talk about some little bit of golf, because we like to do that with all Justin Thomas, winning the Players. We'll get into that a little bit as well. So again, I want to remind you can follow me on Twitter at RickNator555. Follow us on Twitter at FP_coverage at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or get your podcast. Chances are we are there. Be sure to give me a rating. I hope it's 5 stars. Tell me what you like, what you don't like. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. Remember to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. Get all your articles, podcasts, and live shows. It's all there on the Full Press Coverage app. You can follow my work over at PinstripeProspects.com, covering Yankees minor league prospects, and Barrett Sports Media, where I wrote up an article, again, where Shaq and Candace Parker, they get into some interesting debates on the TNT postgame on Tuesdays, but Candace Parker said in an interview with Sports Illustrated she loves debating with Shaq, so we talked about that a little bit as well on the website this for my work on Barrett Sports Media this week. So again, thank you to all of our student section reporters for taking the time out of their busy schedules to talk about their teams in the tournament. This should be a lot of fun. We're glad it's back. And one of the things I talked about last week, you tend, with all the change in the world over the last year, you tend to not take for granted the little things you have. And one of the little things you have in sports, you get a bracket every year, whether you're right, whether you're wrong. You take a shot, and you love watching these games. You love the upsets. You love the buzzer beaters. You love everything about this tournament. And it's one of my favorite events, if not my favorite event in sports. Even when my school, St. John's, doesn't get in, I still love watching it. It's nonstop, wire-to-wire games. You got to sit on your couch from noon to about midnight and just, Friday and Saturday and just keep watching basketball. And it's a lot of fun. So we're hoping for some success in this tournament. Get through with as few glitches as possible. And we get some exciting storylines along the way because March usually tends to bring up championship week as any indicator. Then March Madness is going to be, I think, an all-time one. So from all of us here at Full Press Coverage, I'm Ricky Keeler saying have a great week, rest of your week. Enjoy the first round of March Madness. Good luck with your brackets, everybody. And I'll see you back here over the weekend for some more Kicking with Keeler. Thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, on my NCAA Tournament Bracket Palooza Special.